Welcome aboard, you people. It is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. So for another day of broadcast insolence. I hope everybody is in proper place right
yes,
now.
Yes, take your positions, people.
Yep.
Let's begin.
I'm here checking in from sports.
Lauren, can we count on you?
Roll call.
Oh, yeah. I got here like 3 hours early.
Present.
Oh, wait, because I have to.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'll be honest. You know, that John Williams, he keeps talking to you people, and I feel like he's stealing. That's what I feel like. That's what I feel like happens there. But that's okay. That's all right.
We're all yours. Right?
I'm willing to share. Hey, you know what? He did mention something right at the end here that I think is the last two things he mentioned, I'm going to steal as well. First of all, Ben Bradley is going to join us from WGN TV News coming up in just a few minutes. And we are going to talk about that Buffalo Wild Wings police report because that is something beyond imagination. This guy had a swastika.
Oh, my gosh.
Who was sitting there? But he says, hey, listen, I didn't ask anybody. Yeah, hold. I didn't ask anybody to move. They just knew there was going to be trouble if they put a black family next to me.
Based on his prior conversations and things he had said to other staff, like servers there in the restaurant who happen to be people of color.
Yes, because he would not accept food from them. And this guy's a regular. You know, they talk about this guy for months and months, maybe years. He'd been going there once or twice a weekend. And they knew who he was. What do you do about that? What a crazy world this is. Anyway, that with Ben Bradley. I do want to mention, though, and I'm glad everybody's on the same page, the Hawks are back. I mean, they're going to win the Stanley Cup now. But, I mean, I know.
Woo, let's go.
I know I was a little bit, I had trepidation, trepidatiousness.
You? No.
Yeah, I know. Hard to believe. 1 week from today, we're going to be at the United Center. And you know, when we're at the United Center, you know what our record is like.
100%.
Good. Yeah, well, it's good. It's very good. Yeah. So we've got that going for us, which is very, very nice. It'll be a lot of fun.
I think we've ever lost the game we've gone to in terms of broadcasting live.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not saying gone to because we go to a lot of games.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Safe. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what.
Did I miss one day?
That's what happened. Let's say, well, you know what?
Well, we were going
with safer.
That.
You know, in hockey, you get to fudge by going, well, they had a point in every game that we went to.
Yeah. So there.
That too.
Go Hawks.
Last night was the most fun game of the season for the Blackhawks.
Oh, by far.
Wild game.
And moving, and this is a team, this is a franchise, the Golden Knights, the Las Vegas Golden Knights, they've never beaten before.
Right, exactly.
They've gotten a point against them, they've tied them, I think twice, right? But they've never beaten them.
And that's the sort of game that gets you excited if you're a Hawks fan, because that's the style Jeremy Colliton's wanted his guys to play since he came here to Chicago. And everything we saw last night, and the goaltending, too, was just incredible from Corey Crawford and Robin Lehner all season long. So everything clicked last night, it was a fun game.
Great. It was so much fun. And what we had, and Kirby Doc, back to him. We interviewed him right when he got drafted. I take full credit for
of course you do.
for being the guy that, you know, made him feel comfortable and made him feel as though he was totally at home here in Chicago. Yeah? No? No?
Totally. He gave you a shout out in his post game interview, Ro. Who's that guy? He's on Windy City Live.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And Dylan Strome played well. That's an interesting line. That may
it's
be
a great line.
One of the most fun lines in all of hockey is you got Patrick Kane, Dylan Strome, right? Kirby Doc.
Yeah, DeBrincat had two assists. Patrick Kane and Dylan Strome each had a goal and two assists last night.
Right.
So that line's clicking.
Yep. And Kathmandu play. You know, we talked to him the day before yesterday, had a great game.
Again, he gave you a shout on his post-game interview. He said, I'd like to thank God, my mother, and Rokan.
Was it in that order? Are you sure?
It might have started with Ro.
Yeah. Seems weird that he'd done it that way.
I think one should always thank God first.
Okay.
And then,
all right.
And
just
then straight
to
me.
Right.
Right.
Then,
because I think I'm better for them than their moms are in some cases. I don't know. Depends on who it is.
You drive them around in a minivan and clean their clean their hockey uniforms.
Oh, please don't take up that duty.
Yeah, that's
any
stench.
Hockey mom will know that stench. The stench of the gunk.
So that is. Congratulations! I'm so excited about that. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll be out there. If you're going to be out at the hockey game next Thursday, come by and say hello to us because we're at the. I guess we're at Goose Island. I think next week, right? I believe. Yep. All right.
Goose Island.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. The Goose Island Pub, right there in the concourse.
Nice little spot.
Oh yeah, by 118-19A. Is it start at 118 or at 119? Does anybody know? That's the question you get a lot from people wearing foreign hockey jerseys when you're there. All right. And a pair of Casey and the Sunshine Band tickets. We got to give those away. We got another one of our favorite aldermen, Matt O'Shea from the Fightin' 19th, yeah. And they are fighting because they're angry down there. We'll talk to him. That's all coming your way this hour. But first, Lauren's got her eyes on the skies and the roads. I would like to make a correction immediately right now
important
on the program.
Correction.
Very important correction.
This just in.
Yes, I mentioned a week from today, we are going to be at the Blackhawks game at the Goose Island Pub, which is where we, in the concourse. That's where we broadcast from. It's a lot of fun. It's a ton of fun. If you're there for the game, come by and say hello before. We stop about a half an hour before puck. But I said it was between 118 and 119. And then I just got a text from our friend, the kids know, our friend Wally. You know Wally?
We know Wally.
Yeah.
Aw, sweetest man in the world.
Man in the world is Wally.
Love Wally.
Yes. Big CLTV viewer, watches this show every day. And he goes, it's 111, 112. Our secret door is in 118, 119. That's the
Oh yeah.
That's where you find Wally.
Why did I bring that up? One might ask, but I just did. All right, there you go. Thank you, Wally, for the correction. Ben Bradley joins us now from the WGN-TV newsroom.
Hey guys, I was by your beautiful studios just a short time ago.
You didn't want to come by and say hi to us?
Well, I actually nearly missed getting back to the TV station, and for the 4 o'clock news, we had this kind of only in Chicago moment that I think restores faith. First, I should tell you, we're having lunch with somebody over at the Palm. It's the WGN Investigates team. Yeah, Ro suggested it. And who do we see walking, parading through like a cavalcade of political stars? But Willie Wilson.
He's a regular.
He lives right next door.
Yeah, he lives in the... Right?
Oh, yeah. I remember from when Rahm had to go kiss his ring after...
Oh, thank God you said ring.
Forced into the runoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We saw former Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin. Who's going to be announcing a run for Dorothy Brown's job.
Were they together?
They were together, along with some other folks.
Oh, good for him.
Yep.
Yeah. I love Willie Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Really, truly do.
I know. I ran into Dennis Culleton, who, of course, was former Governor Ryan's spokesperson, yes. And now speaks on behalf of the Ricketts family.
Yes, he does. As a matter of fact, I introduced this staff once to Dennis Culleton,
mm-hmm.
And Lauren and Kevin were like, what does he do? I go, I can't tell you.
You just run into him in odd spots.
Right. But
the reason I nearly missed this spot is because one of the folks we were with who was kind enough to drive us couldn't find her keys as we go to leave the restaurant. Searching, must have dropped them by the table. No.
Yeah.
And we had parked on lower Wacker Drive.
Oh, boy, it's something down there.
Yeah. Yeah, because, of course, stupid me, I was like, no, I'm not paying a valet for parking. I got a spot, a secret spot I go to because I get my hair cut down there. It's a Pelsa's old place.
Uh-huh. And I know
so,
the spot.
Yeah, after.
Stop plugging?
One more name
keep going.
Drop. So after about 20 minutes looking, I was like, well, let's go see. Maybe they're still in the car. Not only were the keys still in the car was running.
Wow.
For an hour and a half while we were having lunch on lower Wacker Drive.
You know,
and no one stole the car.
It was
nice and warm and toasty when we got back in.
Well, stealing a car is unlikely down there. What is more likely is a guy going to sleep in your car.
Or live there.
Yeah.
Or something else.
You show back up and the guy's like, asleep in the back seat. You open the door and I'm already claiming this place. This is my house.
Our legendary, uh-huh. newsman from years ago at the other place, mm-hmm. Mr. Jim Johnson, Edward R. Murrow Award winner, mm-hmm. and Murrow is still spinning in his grave about it. He used to be, he and Paul Harvey, no less than Paul Harvey.
Good day.
Used to park on Lower Wacker Drive when the radio complex was over at Michigan and Wacker.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, Jim came down to his car, and there were meters down there. And they would go, literally, in the commercial breaks, go down and plug the meters.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And this is what they would do. Including, and I'm not kidding about this, Paul Harvey.
With the beautiful hair
and the fabulous suit.
Yes. Yeah. Arguably the most legendary radio man ever from Chicago, for sure.
Oh, gosh, no
and
question.
Maybe ever, right? I mean, that's, the 20th century is defined by Paul Harvey. And he would go downstairs and plug quarters into a meter.
I'm disappointed Angel didn't do it for him. They had such a beautiful marriage.
Yeah, I think that's why they had a beautiful marriage. He could have sent Junior down there, but at that point it was primarily...
How did Paul Harvey not have an assigned spot?
It was ABC. Don't ask. Anyway, the point... Ben and I will tell you that story.
Yeah.
The point is that Jim gets down to his car, And he opens up the car door. Mm-hmm. And he goes, God, something smells in here. A guy had gone into his car and used it as a porta potty.
Oh, no. Oh,
he could, he went, took it to the cleaning, you know, to, did the whole thing.
Did you ever get that smell out?
No. Never got it out. No. Traded the car in.
Oh, good.
2 days later.
Yeah. Because can you imagine what that car would smell like in the summer heat?
Yeah.
You know, you think you had gotten it out, you paid for the extra detailing, and then the first night. I think had it had been yesterday or the day before when it was even colder, there's a good chance somebody could have been living in the car. But we got very lucky, and
well,
we made the radio spot.
You would think you would see the exhaust, like you'd know it's on, right? Like it's there for the taking.
This was only the entire WGN Investigates team.
I think it's more likely
we missed it.
It's more likely that there would have been an evacuation of the entire neighborhood if Homeland Security had come across it. That would be why I think there's a car. You know, now that's an unusual package down there.
Right.
A car, you know, running, thing going, something must be going on.
Yeah. There must not be much of a market for Subarus on Lower Wacker.
Or an aftermarket.
Another plug. I don't want to talk about this Buffalo Wild Wings thing, because the police report came out now. This is the Buffalo Wild Wings in Naperville a couple weeks ago. A bunch of adults with kids, African-Americans, came into a Buffalo Wild Wing in Naperville. And they were seated near a guy who's a regular at the restaurant, it is said, who then apparently... this regular is used to being upset about minorities for a number of reasons, including, again, according to this, that according to this story, that he would not accept food that was delivered to him by minorities, right, or African Americans, right. So the manager comes over and sees this, these adults and kids. Basketball team, essentially, right? The sports team of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
They are then being told that they have to move. And they're like, what do you mean we got to move? What the hell's going on here? And it was, well, this guy doesn't like minorities. This guy now claims he never said that he wanted them to be moved. They were doing it he claims that Buffalo Wild Wings was doing it preemptively.
It was a preemptive strike.
Right. Now, what I like about this story is that this guy, it is now said, was going to the Buffalo Wild Wings one or two times a weekend, consistently for months or years. It's it's a little unclear.
Yeah.
So now, he also has a tattoo of a swastika, we're told.
Right. Known for racist jokes, not wanting anybody of color to serve him or touch his food. I mean, just a history of just horribly racist behavior.
Yeah, not a great guy. The write-up I saw said the report says the couple admitted to making comments in the past at Buffalo Wild Wings that would be considered inappropriate or racist.
This is a Cubs man and wife team?
But they didn't this time, according to them.
Oh, that's all good.
Big difference.
I just wonder, as a server, what do you do in that situation?
Well, what an awful situation,
right?
For the Buffalo Wild
in.
Wings staff to be in, and you would hope that the restaurant manager would be empowered enough at some time to step in at some point if this guy had a history of these types of comments and say much earlier, hey, sorry, that doesn't work here.
Well, you know, it's an interesting debate, right? Because it's a private business that you go into. And then there's a question about whether or not it's a public accommodation. And so the question is, if you go in, are there different rules for you based on your race?
Is this like the whole Baker question?
I think it's not dissimilar.
But turn it on its head and say, okay, well, if a Nazi comes in and asks a baker to bake a cake with a swastika on it, do you do?
Like in Indiana, that's okay. You give him half off. But the point is, that's just a joke. Hello. Goodbye.
Anna DeVlantis and I disassociate ourselves from work.
I give him that joke.
Any comments or complaints should be directed specifically.
Well, I mean, the thing is,
the issue
depends.
Is how do you handle those types of requests? But and it's kind of a passive thing to have somebody in a restaurant. Do you then say, sir, we're going to have to leave? We no longer want this type of behavior, which seems like the right thing to do. But then does he get to sue you now for refusing him service? It just puts you in such a terrible position. In a restaurant situation.
And you kind of feel bad for the employees here who are working at, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings number 1,212, you know, that may or may not feel a big connection to corporate, may not feel like they have corporate's backing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because it is
in terms of how you stand up to a situation like this.
It's a big lever in between, and then they're going to they threw a guy out. They're not going to know exactly where the whole thing goes. I don't know if you've got it now. I don't know where his swastika is. I haven't asked him.
No. I didn't check.
I would imagine it's fairly visible. No one's really inspected his body.
But if a guy has a swastika on his forehead, which is always a sign of a prison visit, generally, but some other kind of a something. Do you let a guy in to a restaurant? Because, you know, the other theory here is that restaurants do have a right to refuse service.
I mean, if you walk in there without a shirt on, Ro, they're not going to let you in.
Right.
And that's regardless of your tattoo.
Right. I mean, they do have a right to
what
refuse service.
I
can't talk about it. And you can't see that.
Ben. Sometimes you wear that mesh shirt and it's hard
then
to
you can.
Look away.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my piercings, my body piercings.
I'm surprised you have those, though. I would have thought the needle would have scared you a little
Aren't
bit.
Aren't you guys going on a road trip? You'll get to learn a lot more about each other.
Yeah.
Please spare us those details.
Follow our Instagram stories for more.
Anyway, I find that that story gets more and more interesting.
Does.
But as John Williams is just pointing out on the on his program before us, is that this does appear to be a way by which he can save himself the legal hassle of being sued here, which is, hey, I didn't ask.
Yeah, it's not on me. I didn't ask him to move those people. I mean, but had he asked in the past? Was it just known to the staffers, or was it his constant behavior?
Can you sue somebody for being a
behavior?
Racist?
Well, you can sue
for a violation of your civil rights in some
not for
form
being
or
a racist, but for acting on it. You can sue
it depends how you act on it, right? I would think it would have to be a battery or the commission of some other crime.
Yeah,
always good when you and I speculate on legal things.
This has stopped me before.
We are available for private consultation, by the way.
Don't worry about it. It's all going great.
You can hire a real lawyer if you wanted to, too.
That's right. We have a few of those around here, too.
We know those.
Yeah. All right. Well, the funny thing is that intolerance tends not to win in the court of public opinion, but it can win in the court of law. And that's the crazy part of this.
Yeah. So, it is indeed.
All right. All right, thank you, Ben. We'll see you on the 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Looking forward to it.
All right, that's very good. In the meantime, Kim Gordon has the WGN radio news right now. Hello, it's the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. One of our favorites, Alderman Matt O'Shea from the Fightin' 19th, has joined us right now. He's one of those guys who has been how many years have you been in now?
I'm on my third term.
Third term. Wow. So, you liking it?
Most days.
Okay. Everything going smoothly?
Yeah. Well,
Alderman O'Shea, never get any complaints in your office?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I could just, there's certain wards in this town. Every ward has its own challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But that's got to be the most complex and dynamic. First of all, the 19th Ward is gigantic, right, on the southwest side of the city. But it is also, it's got a lot of people who work for the city in it. So there's a lot. There is complaining, and then they're sucking up all at the same time. Would you say that's? Hey, I just got laid off at a job. You got anything over by the city? You know, they get a lot of that sort of thing. They probably
represent a very educated electorate.
You do actually very connected. You know, almost there are days that you wish you had people like that weren't interested in what the future was. You know, just like half of my aldermen is like they half the people are complaining about everything, and then the other half are like, I don't even know what an alderman does. All right, let's talk about this. We got two things first. Yeah, let me start with what you're coming in about, which is you've got an ethics plan that you are proposing that you would like to see passed in city council. And before I laugh you out of the studio about that, I understand the need for
that?
It, but it's surprising that there hasn't already been one. What is in yours?
It's rather simple. It's I have 49 colleagues, 50 aldermen, that aldermen cannot serve as paid lobbyists. In addition to doing
are you a communist?
And that other elected officials can't lobby the Chicago City Council. And this is a response to the many, many ethical scandals we've seen in this state, in this county, in this city over the last few years.
Okay, so let me ask. I understand that. That seems on its very face to be a good start. And let's explain the second part there. It certainly makes sense that an alderman shouldn't be a paid lobbyist for somebody else when they're working, right? And for the city. Let's just say the gumball industry. I don't know that there is still a gumball industry, but let's just say there is. That in the gumball industry, if you're a lobbyist for the gumball industry and all of a sudden you're on the city council and you decide that you want gumball machines in every public library and in every public accommodation in the city of Chicago, every daily center everywhere, that would seem to be a conflict of interest. Currently, could you still weigh in on that and vote on that if you were the lobbyist for it? You're specifically a lobbyist on something, you don't have to recuse yourself on a vote that directly affects your income?
You are supposed to recuse yourself.
But you don't. But there's no rule that says you have to.
Sure, there is.
Oh, there is.
But, I mean, the problem here, it's plain and simple. You know, taxpayers need to know that they're
elected
officials.
Stop people totally from doing this is what you're doing.
Yes.
You're asking them, not just, you're supposed to recuse yourself, maybe you are and maybe you're not, or maybe you're, at least you're twisting arms on behalf of the gumballs. But what you're saying is that you have to give up all of that. Okay, that's A1. B2, other elected officials not lobbying, and that's an interesting thing, because if you are a county commissioner, let's say, you can still be a lobbyist, right? And then the county commissioner can walk across the hallway, literally across the hallway, to the city council and say, hey, you know, I'm the gumball guy now, and I need you to put gumballs in. Right? Is that
kind of like that? Yeah.
Is that who we're talking about, though?
I mean, I would hope that this particular piece of legislation is co-authored by my colleague, Alderman Michelle Smith of the 43rd Ward. And we do have 30 of our colleagues have signed on as co-sponsors. My hope is that we can get this thing passed through the council quickly and that other elected bodies, and I know that Governor Pritzker has been very outspoken about this ethics reform.
Yes.
And that the county board and other...
Because state legislators are doing it too, right? They work all kinds of other jazz.
But so the lobbying piece of it is one piece. And then you have the other piece where the side gigs or the law firms and the tax firms and things like that are also, they seem to serve as conflicts when you're voting on related bills and legislation and taking money from people in those positions who would profit from the kinds of legislation or things that you would consider in city council. Where are we on that, Alderman O'Shea?
I mean, I have several colleagues who also are attorneys and were practicing attorneys long before they joined the city council. And I do believe that elected officials in a capacity as a lawyer should be able to handle, you know, real estate closings.
But there's we're going to take a quick time out. I want to get more explanation on this because this is a big deal. But there's a difference
deal.
Between being a registered lobbyist and a lawyer.
Correct.
Right? You can still be an influencer without being a registered lobbyist.
But there are total conflicts in the legal world as well, is what I'm pointing out. And that's what a lot of the mayoral candidates ran on that, but didn't. I never figured out where it went.
All right. Well, come right back. Alderman O'Shea is here if you've got any questions or you need a job by the 19th Ward, 312-981-7200. I'm going to make your day easy for you right now, Alderman. Right now, Lauren Lapka's got her eyes on the skies and the roads. Alderman Matt O'Shea is here from the Fighting 19th on the southwest side of the city of Chicago, and he is introducing lobbying reform in the city council, which is, in the old days, his car wouldn't start. You know, it would take him 2 months to find his car if that happened. Now you're doing it, and you think you might be able to get this passed next week.
Yes, I'm confident that the overwhelming majority of my colleagues would be in support of this measure.
And you're arguing that city council personnel shouldn't be, the persons, members, aldermen, shouldn't be lobbying for private companies to other governments.
Right.
Right? Or
we should not be paid lobbyists. We should be solely working on representing the interests of our community.
And your ethics reform would also require, it would prohibit lobbyists who are elected officials from lobbying the city council, too, which is kind of really more of the way that this works.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
More prevalent.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
How many of your colleagues do side jobs or get most of their income or some of their income from another line of work other than just being an alderman? Because I know some are just aldermen, and that's your job, and that seems like a lot to handle in and of itself, but then others have very active businesses on the side.
Of the 50, I don't know what the breakdown is now. More and more aldermen are full-time aldermen, like myself, this being their only source of income.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I'd like to see. I'd actually like to go over to the FBI office and ask them what they know about all of the different. What other gigs do some of these people have? All right, let's talk about this. Because I'm fascinated by what is now the great debate for the last couple of days. The rideshare companies. This is a fight between the new mayor of the city and the rideshare companies, whereas the old mayor of the city wasn't really fighting the rideshare companies, pretty much giving them whatever they wanted, right? I mean, when they first got in here, it was very much an encouragement for Uber and then Lyft, because Rahm Emanuel had to be ecumenical about this, that Uber and Lyft, you know, start to come in. He gave them proprietary stuff at the airports, which really ticked off the cab industry and really ticked off the private, you know, the limo services and all those kinds of things. But, you know, and let us not forget that Rahm Emanuel's brother was one of the major investors in Uber when it was first
Jenny
launching.
Uber driver will remind you of, taxi drivers in particular.
Yes.
We'll tell you that.
Yes.
You know what? You know who owns part of Uber?
Yes, Ari Emanuel.
Take a taxi and see if that doesn't come up.
So let's, but now there is this whole thing about a number of black church leaders came forward to say, listen, Uber, hey, Lori Lightfoot, Uber is putting $50 million, the rideshare industry, I think is what they're saying, is putting $50 million on the table for development, and I use that term loosely, development in African-American churches in Chicago if we oppose the restrictions or the taxes on Uber and Lyft. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I read that yesterday after our city council meeting. I know that came up, I believe, in the press conference. I don't know. I mean, I will tell you, many years ago, is in representing my community, if you hailed a cab downtown here or getting on off an airplane in O'Hare, a taxi cab driver did not want to drive to 103rd and Western. Why? Because they don't have a ride back.
Right.
So ride sharing filled a void.
That 103rd and Western is a nice neighborhood. But
very
it's,
nice neighborhood. But it's pretty far away from... Right. The Central Business District and obviously O'Hare International Airport. So ride sharing filled that void. That was problematic to get a cab to take you into our community, particularly in the evening hours. And it was hard to find a cab in our neighborhood to take you downtown. So ride sharing filled that void. And what we've
does
seen.
Does it effectively fill the void, though? Because we were just talking about this yesterday. This is a debate that's often had.
It's a big debate in the city
right now. That Uber drivers. Now, you might have more Uber drivers than you would have cab drivers, because there's some people that are sitting at home, right, in Beverly or Mount Greenwood or any of the other places, or Oak Lawn, you know, outside the city, that are sitting at home and they're waiting for their Uber thing to buzz, and all of a sudden they see, because their phone is on and they're in the neighborhood, and they're like, oh. You know, there's a guy at 103rd and Western who wants to... There's a guy over at Cork and Carry who needs a ride to get back downtown. I just want to get Cork and Carry and our dear friends. Now, if you're going to do that, you got to get... that seems like, all right, fine, I'm going to make $20 or something here that I wouldn't normally make, or $30. But are there really that many... Is it really filling that much of a void other than that circumstance? Because that's what we don't see.
Yes, that has been helpful for folks who are looking for a different option other than driving a vehicle.
The way I understand it, though, Alderman O'Shea, is that if you went from the airport to, say, your neighborhood, 103rd and Western, that you would not get that extra fee. It's to reduce the downtown congestion where you really get hit. If you take a solo ride by yourself, not a ride share, a solo ride by yourself to the downtown, that's when you get hit. If you're going from neighborhood to neighborhood on the outskirts of the city, you don't get hit as hard, especially if you're doing... a shared ride. Is that how
right.
you understand
that,
it?
That's how I understand it. So what it started out as, it was filling a void in a community like mine. What we've come to find is Central Business District at any given time, morning, noon, night, is flooded with hundreds and sometimes thousands of ride-sharing vehicles clogging the roadways.
Right, putting their hazards on and actually sitting in lanes waiting for people to come out of the building.
It's problematic at the airports also, particularly up at O'Hare along the tollway there. So to combat that, that's where this legislation came from.
Does that combat it, though? Does that combat the... Does that take more people out of the rideshare industry, do you think?
Is it on the
margin?
That remains to be seen, you know, trying to promote more, you know, carpooling and rideshare, so to speak, and also lowering the rates to take people from neighborhood to neighborhood.
I think the tickets, I think the obstruction tickets for rideshare drivers should be double what they are for civilians. Because then they got to know. You know, what's interesting is rideshare people cannot pick up and drop off on Michigan Avenue.
Right.
Yeah. That's... the between Oak Street and the river, and I think it actually goes all the way down to Roosevelt, if I'm not mistaken. But they have to pull off onto a side street or whatever because they screw up the traffic system all the time. And there was a big enforcement, big crackdown a couple of years ago where they were trying to grab these guys up, and there's just police doing nothing but ticketing Uber drivers for doing that on Michigan Avenue, which was creating twice the amount of obstruction because then they had to write the ticket and do the whole thing.
Wait for the ticket.
And then you figure, all right, well, these people will never do it again. But it was only those 10 people that were never doing it again. Everybody else is doing
it. And the next 10.
Right. But I mean, I think there's got to be some sort of teeth in that because I feel like there's not enough. Cab drivers. I've always felt badly for the cab industry here because they got totally jobbed by this. There were rules, real rules that cab drivers had to live by. There were background checks and all kinds of, you know, the vehicles had to be inspected. There were all kinds
of
things.
Drug tests.
Right. Everything. And then there was
the
311 and the medallions. And
expensive.
Getting to that. Guys were paying, maybe individuals or, you know, a couple guys would get together, and they'd pay $100,000 for a medallion or $200,000. I think at the very peak, it was somewhere close to like $180,000. And now the medallions are worth $10,000. And you've got cab drivers here and families of you know, descendant families that were counting on those things being worthwhile. You've had a spate of suicides in New York City because the exact same thing has happened there, and here in Chicago in this industry. I mean, it's really an untold story.
It's a very difficult job.
It is. Yeah. And the number of people who had fleets as well, like personal car drivers, those guys too got really hit.
Yeah.
Hit hard.
And then the thing is I find very little quality control with, there's supposed to be quality control with Uber and Lyft, but I don't really see it very much. And, you know, you could look at the stars and go, well, does this guy have stars or I'm going to turn them down because they don't have stars? But then they're grading us, and you know, like, you don't want to have the right stars. It just, the whole thing feels very rackety to me. And I thought it when it first came in, and now I see it, and now I see what's going on here, and I'm on Team Lori Lightfoot on this. That's what I would like to say.
Tax the heck out of them.
Yeah, right. And find them more. Alderman O'Shea, thank you very much. The Fightin' 19th. We appreciate you being with us. We got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And it's the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just ask a question here of all the people on this very radio program. Do you like to have a good time?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Too often, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. I mean, I would like just for you to describe the number of times on this program that you felt queasy from the night before at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when we start. Is it A, one or two times?
A week?
It B, maybe once a month? Or is it C, too often to mention?
Mm-hmm.
C,
right? Okay.
C.
So we are going to throw the party of a lifetime on December 6th. At the Tinley Park Convention Center. It is a party that, it's a Christmas party, holiday party, whatever you would like to call it. I personally am not going to engage on the war thereof. I'm just going to say whatever you want, because not everybody celebrates Christmas. And that's okay. Everybody's welcome. That's what I want. I want everybody. And I want everybody to come with a toy for the Toys for Tots program. You bring one. If you want to bring two or 10 or 20 or a truckload, you can do that too. Because every year, this is always surprising to me. How many people? Because for more than two decades, we've been doing this Toys for Tots show somewhere in December in Chicago. And this year, we're going back to this will be the, it was 19 years ago we were at the Tinley Park Convention Center. I'll never forget this. It was the Christmas of 2000. And we did this show there. We opened up. We were the first thing ever in the Tinley Park Convention Center in this particular hall there. And we had 1,000 people at this deal. And the Ides of March played with us. So we're going back and doing, this is the 20th anniversary of the Tinley Park show. And it was amazing how many toys we collected. And people did. They showed up with van fulls of toys. It's always
That's
great.
That's so cool. People are very generous.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's amazing to see.
And large format toys, too. So we'll have a tree out there. People will be able to put these things around the tree. And then we'll have, of course, the Ides of March playing. We got a radio broadcast from 3 to 5:30. And then after 5:30, it's a concert. And there is going to be alcohol for sale. Mm-hmm. There's also going to be
a purple-haired man on stage.
Yes, a purple-haired man on stage. And Marines. And it's just such a... for people who have been to the show, it is so much fun. And you feel really good coming out of it, too.
You do.
Because it's like, we know you've done something good. You've given something back. So we want to invite people to join us. And we're not doing tickets this year. Just show up. You can just show. We have a lot of room. And we're capable of taking... There's plenty of parking right there where you could just go right in. It's easy peasy. We don't want to make this difficult for anybody. But we do want you to come by, and we do want you to drop off toys. If you're not going to be able to make it to the show, there's no excuse for this. But our friends at Apple Chevrolet, 8585 West 159th Street in Tinley Park, are accepting toys now for this show. So if you're in the Southland and you want to do that, stop by. They're going to be able to put all their toys. You can see right now, if you go into Apple Chevrolet's showroom, they've got the Chevy Silverados, the big, beautiful pickup trucks.
Yeah.
They've got them filled up with toys. And they want you to bring more in to fill it up even higher. It's really, really cool what they do. And they got a Marine that they just hired. The new general manager of Apple Chevrolet was a United States Combat Marine. So he's certified badass. Don't make him mad.
Wait, hold on a second.
Patrick wants to say something to us at 312-91-7200. Go ahead, Patrick.
What's going on, bro? Hey, I was there 19 years ago, and it was a ball. I was actually with Gatto's Restaurant. We served stuffed shells. We were right next to you in the stage, and you had several stuffed shells, as well as some alcohol, too. But we had a great time there, and it was a lot of fun. I'm going to go back again this year.
You got to go back.
Patrick, did he have more alcohol than shells?
Gotta go, Patrick. Nice talking to you. See you. Yeah, it was nice talking to you. Bye-bye now. Yes, thank you.
He's going to want to go through it all. That's nice.
Boy, that was something. Oh, and then there was an after party down there because one of our staff people lived near there. And there was an after party. Oh,
huh.
Wow.
Interesting.
I know. I'm just saying that because Lauren Lapka lives near there. And speaking of Lauren Lapka, she's got her eyes on the skies and the roads.
For the news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN-TV.
All right. Now, I would like to discuss this Colin Kaepernick situation. Seems like Colin Kaepernick, no matter what happens, even when years later everybody's trying to make this a sort of a comeback moment, people are still mad. Now, I don't get this. And I'm going to tell you who I'm most mad at. I'm most mad at the Chicago Bears right now.
They're not on the list.
It's not even that they would take Colin Kaepernick. I don't care if they take him or they don't take him, although I do think that they should give him a hard look. There are five or six teams right now in the NFL that are desperately in need of a quarterback, a third quarterback, or a good backup, or maybe a guy just to replace the guy who's in there right now who kind of sucks. And the Bears fall into that last category right there that I just described. So why, if everybody's already so nuts and mad about this, about the Bears quarterback situation, and we're going to be sitting there with Mitchell Trubisky, who does not really seem like he is capable of running an offense against any kind of an average to good defense, why wouldn't they take a look at the guy?
I don't get it either. I mean, if you're a team, I don't care. Look, the Patriots are sending somebody. They have Tom Brady on their team. I realize his contract's up at the end of the year, but every single team should be sending somebody there. There's no excuses not to have at least a rep there. And some of the, you know,
should they be doing that, though? Let me ask you this. Should they be doing that to look at the guy as a potential player, or should they do that as part of sort of a dog and pony show here for the NFL to make everybody feel better? Because that sounds to me like you're saying everybody should be there just to...
Oh, no, I don't mean it in a way of like showing unity or that they're supporting Colin Kaepernick. I simply mean it as finding talent for your team. That's what I mean. I don't mean they should all be there holding hands, being like, we're together. We're together again. I mean, they should be there simply because that's a player who's talented. Go look at him and see if he can help your football team. Probably not going to happen this season, but next season...
So it's this Saturday. Where are they holding it, Kev?
In Atlanta. I don't know exactly where.
Okay, but in Atlanta.
Yeah, and it's going to be a couple of former coaches, NFL coaches, will be running, putting them through drills and things like that. Former head coach Hugh Jackson will lead the drills.
And the Panthers aren't going either. People critical of them because it's only a few hours away.
Yeah, you know, it's the 11 teams for now, but I would be surprised if really, really be surprised if every team in the league doesn't have at least a representative. And the people that are critical of the league saying, well, maybe this is just a PR move. You're putting on a Saturday. Teams are traveling on a Saturday. You can make that case for sure. But even if it was a different day of the week, how many head coaches would be going? And general managers could go Saturday.
Right.
And then get to wherever it's Atlanta. You could get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a flight anywhere. We're basically all day long.
You can send a scout.
Yeah.
I mean teams, what scouts doing?
Every single resource possibly available. There's no excuses not to be there. Just to see. And plus, like, look, even if you're set with quarterback or feel very comfortable, aren't you just a little curious, too?
Well, also, if you can take him and trade him for something you need more.
Because once he gets in, are you of the theory that once he gets in, then...
Well, at this point, the deadline's passed, so there's nobody going to trade him this year.
No, but again...
But the point is, once he gets in, is it over now? Is the curse broken? Is everything good? And then there's a question, is he going to kneel, not going to kneel? Who's kneel?
It is a question. I'm sure whoever teams that do talk to him will ask him that.
Stephen A. Smith said this.
For me personally, believe it or not, I think the Chicago Bears. I think the Chicago Bears desperately need another quarterback. They're desperately looking for another quarterback. They can try to hide it all they want to. They've lost belief. Nagy doesn't believe in Mitchell Trubisky anymore. Nobody in Chi-Town believes in Mitchell Trubisky any longer. And you definitely need it. Even though he can run, he's got some good wheels on them. They ain't like the wheels that Kaepernick got on them, I can tell you that much. But I would tell you, ultimately, when I think about that defense that's in Chicago and what Colin Kaepernick would bring to the table, you know, for them.
I'm not sure that's true because Mitchell Trubisky is pretty fleet. He just doesn't know when to start running. That's right. The difference. I'm not going to...
I don't think anybody would trade for him because nobody would even sign him. So that part of it. But, I kind of disagree there, too. I think Trubisky's faster than Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see if he does sign with a team this year. Like, how many teams are actually going to panic, sign him this year, and put him in? That seems almost impossible to do, considering the guy's been out of the NFL for 2.5 years. There's only 7 regular season games left.
His agent says he's been working out 5 days a week, hours a day, seeming to indicate that you're going to be surprised what you see, but what we've learned in the past, isn't it, that that's a tough thing to be out for that long.
Well, being in shape is one component of it. The other is learning a playbook.
Right.
I mean, it's the NFL. Yeah. I mean, this isn't, you know, handing the ball off the middle. You got to read defenses. You got to learn a system. So that's going to take a lot of time.
Can't he just call Bill Belichick and get all the playbooks for all the teams?
I think Belichick probably does have a database.
Probably has all those. Send them so I can just practice on all of them. These are the ones I think I'm going to need to be on.
Yeah. It seems like just about anybody who's a part of the NFL has been, especially the players, they've been all for the return of Colin Kaepernick.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Prince Amukamara.
Mm-hmm.
He is not the only, but probably the most outspoken of the Bears about this so far, right?
Yeah. Outspoken is the way to put it. I mean, yeah. he just was
lifted his hand on this. Here he is.
But I don't think that criticism is going to come from inside the locker room. Mm-hmm. Even though the reason why he's kneeling is not about the flag, but there's a lot of dudes that are passionate about the flag and still can see it that way. But I think that's the greatest. That's what's so great about football is guys just put all the differences aside and play for one common goal.
That's him responding to a question about how would this impact the locker room. We all know whoever he signs, if he does sign with a team, it's going to be a zoo at team headquarters, right? They're going to be a story the rest of the season. They're going to be a story wherever he is just about every week. The question to him was, how would it really impact the locker room? His response was, I don't think a whole lot, so... I think for the most part, wherever he does sign, you might have a handful of guys, you know, here and there that maybe feel a little bit indifferent about it with the whole kneeling situation. But Kamara sounds like it wouldn't really bother him or the Bears locker room. So
let me throw another thing at you. What if you put Richie Incognito with him in a 2-guy workout?
Like,
so you got opposite ends of the spectrum right there. So no one can argue. So when people get all mad, like, oh, look at how politically correct you are giving him a job. And then they go, hey, no, Incognito comes with him. Oh, I like him. Huh?
Maybe? I kind of like that. That's actually a really good idea.
It would be like the football version of the Green Book is basically what it would be like.
Because you basically have an answer to every
right.
critic there.
Yeah, or 48 hours. You know, you put those two guys together and they got to figure out how to get along.
Let me ask you a thing about this, too, Kev. There's several sports reporters, you know, who cover the NFL for a living are saying, putting out there now, that maybe the NFL settlement that he reached included an agreement where this had to happen by the end of the year, so it's happening for that reason. What happens if nobody takes him?
It's a great question. I mean, it really is.
That, I think that's likely, don't you?
If that's, I mean, but then does it look like just a PR stunt? And is it? Is it?
I mean, that's the question I have is, like I've been saying since this broke, is why are they doing this out of nowhere in week 12 of the 2019 season on a random Saturday? Like, how did this possibly just out of nowhere? Yeah. Was it something Kaepernick has against the league? That is something somebody has against the league? I mean, they settled a grievance earlier in the year, and there's been reports that it ranged from $1 million to $10 million what he got. You know, he was accusing the league, obviously, of blacklisting him and keeping him out of the league because of the kneeling situation, which I think some people would think may have happened. Some people maybe not, but that's what I really want to find out. Adam Schefter was reporting, or at least he said on ESPN yesterday, he says that he thinks that Roger Goodell genuinely feels bad about how everything went down. Now, that's Adam Schefter saying that. Adam Schefter's been covering the NFL for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, he's saying that the guilt just got to Roger Goodell, and all of a sudden Goodell rallied 32 teams and said, we're going to hold a workout on week 12 on a Saturday in Atlanta. Be there if you want to. It's just, there's still a lot of questions surrounding
it. Yeah, I really find that hard to believe.
So do I, bro.
I don't know why. I mean, sometimes I fall for that stuff, you know, and where I'm like, you know what, maybe. And, you know, in situations, things sometimes look like they're one way, but there are other circumstances that seem unlikely, but were the cause of what happened. And so you go like, yeah, giving somebody the benefit of the doubt sometimes is good. I don't think that Roger Goodell falls into that camp.
I mean, are you telling me he can't sleep at night? He's staring at the ceiling, thinking about Colin Kaepernick not playing, and that just the guilt got to him? I don't know.
I didn't even know he had feelings.
I thought that was Belichick.
Right.
When he wears that hood, he looks like one of those... who would you cast him as in Star Wars, Lauren?
Palpatine.
Okay, for sure.
Sure.
I was going to say the evil emperor.
That's exactly what I was going to say, too. Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah, you know who that is?
Yeah, no. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I just feel like there might be another thing. You know, you said that he might have pictures. What if he got the Ming Fu Hulu pictures out of the massage situation down in Palm Beach?
Roger, check your mail. There's going to be a...
You might want to call... Vanilla. You might want to call...
There's an envelope in your mailbox right now, Roger. There's some very interesting details in there.
Yeah.
Get me back in the league, sir.
Yeah, there's just something that you might want to see. Mr. Kraft. Yeah. Little Bobby should be his nickname.
Picture in the envelope along with massaging oil.
I don't know. The end of this
we'll find out
saga will be on Sunday.
Well, will we find out Sunday? Or will they just say, okay, we all took a look. We're deciding what we're going to do.
Well, if no one picks him up.
How long does it take?
I think if no one picks him up in the first day, you're not getting picked up this year.
No, I don't know about that, because teams are going to want to bring him into their facility and work him out on their own.
If no one brings him into their facility and work him out on their own after Sunday.
Right, so if nothing gets scheduled, well, Saturday's the workout, so.
Well, what'll be very interesting. Well, that's what I'm saying.
By the weekend.
What I think more than anything is some team has to call him in anyway and see what the reaction is. See if if people have just forgotten about this, or there's too many other things going on.
And I don't think people have lost the feelings they had 2-3 years ago, because seeing stuff on social media, man.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we wish everybody the best.
Mm-hmm.
I think it must be pictures of Robert Kraft. That's all I can think of now. I'm now totally down on that. All right. Kim Gordon has got the WGN news right now.
You know what this means?
What does that mean?
This means KC and Sunshine Band tickets coming your way right here on 720 WGN.
Dear God.
Kevin and Lauren aren't even moving at all. Kind of was moving to that song.
I just can't stop thinking about roller disco now more than a wedding.
Okay.
I'm tapping my foot a little bit. I was just amazed by the creepy DJ hitting the post once again. He remains undefeated when it comes to hitting the post.
You know, by the way, I worked roller skating rinks too.
Yeah, of course. He lives in a roller rink. He's a one-stop shop. He lives in the DJ booth at the roller rink.
Right. Well, he lives in his car, actually.
His car.
But then he goes to all these different places. Sometimes he sleeps, and he will sleep overnight in the warmest DJ booth. Often gets kicked out of the hotel if he's doing a wedding. All that sort of happens.
Doesn't always make it to the end of the wedding, turns out.
So I just would like to ask our millennial friends here who are in their early 30s, I would like to, or 30, either way, however you want to look
or
at that.
Exactly 30.
Exactly 30. I would like to know, does Casey and the Sunshine Band, does that song have resonance for you?
Sure.
Well, yeah, we listened to it growing up because our parents did.
Mm-hmm. Or your grandparents did?
Mm-hmm. And no, it's just definitely not grandparents.
It's in so many movies. It's just always kind of, I don't know. You always hear that stuff. Isn't that a commercial?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I bet it is. Their music is just, I think just everybody knows their music. It's so out there.
Yes.
I'd go see Casey and the Sunshine Band. Mm-hmm. Show outing? Should we go see him?
I think
we
should.
I kind of think we should because we could go spend the night in Michigan. Right across the...
From the Four Winds Casino.
Right. And this, what I like most about this idea is it gets us away during the Christmas week. And this is the week between Christmas and New Year's,
mm-hmm.
where you really want to escape all the people that are like in and around your house and they're doing things.
It's like, gotta go.
Like asking you for things. Where are the towels?
Yeah, that's the part I don't like.
You're out of toilet paper!
I don't like when people start fishing in my closets and telling me that some of the food I have is bad for me.
Do you keep it in the closet?
No, like, yeah, not closet. I mean, sorry, like cupboards.
Oh,
whatever.
Okay.
That closet. Did I say closet? They go into the cupboards and then they like show you the cereals that you shouldn't be eating and stuff. So I think that's adult members of my family do this.
That's an eating disorder if you're keeping the food in the closet. I just want to say.
Just in case.
Yeah. Right. I hate when people creep around the house and start kind of snooping around. I'm like, what are you doing over there?
Yeah, why do you have
Get
this?
Get out of that closet. There's just towels in there. What, are you planting something in the closet?
Going through your bills.
Right. You got a ComEd bill here. I was just scrolling through.
It's late.
Like, just stay in like a normal area. Don't be walking around the house.
Read your journal. Are you okay?
Right. Yeah, then it gets bad.
I was looking through your underwear drawer. What?
You know, you really should see a doctor about that.
Anytime I see somebody kind of snooping,
I know.
Wait, what are you doing here? What are you doing? I don't know what it is. It's my pet peeve. It drives me nuts.
I noticed that ComEd is asking you to cut down on your energy usage and you're not doing it.
I know. Then you start getting like a lecture. I don't know what it is. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah, it's not a good house guest. It's not a good family guest to start meddling in your stuff.
My mom does that when she comes over the house. Uh-huh. You know, now she doesn't like to come over the house too many stairs. You know, she's asking me to put one of those stair lift things in to my house.
You do have a lot of stairs.
Yeah.
You have a lot of stairs.
Yeah, well,
four stories.
You know, it might not actually be a surprise that I have a lot of stairs. It's an impediment. I'm like the castle on the hill or something or whatever. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? I don't know.
So you keep all the stuff you don't want her to see up on the upper floors?
Right, because to get up to the top floor at Rose House, it's like a 30-minute mountain climb adventure.
Yeah, to see that toilet, oh my God.
Yeah,
really was a trick.
The Sherpa
right?
That accompanies me to get up there every night.
Halfway up, he's got an oxygen tank to get you some fresh air. Here you go, take a few breaths before we finish the final excursion.
Well, we did. At one of the parties that we had a couple of, I guess, months ago now at the house, there was a moment where... After, a number of cocktails, we decided to go up and take a video of my toilet. Now, I know that sounds like, why would anybody want to do that? Well, I just got one of those smart toilets, you know, that does everything for you. And so everybody wanted to meet the toilet. And I just remember there were like six of us crammed into the bathroom shooting a video and me doing a demonstration. I pray that video never, ever goes public.
What are you talking about? It's been on WGNRadio.com
what?
Ever since.
Lauren posted. I saw it.
On the Rokan Show page. Would that be where it's located?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Under what would you search for if you had to try to find it?
I don't know. Oh.
Rose Toilet?
All right. I will sue you.
Toilet Tour, I believe, is what it's called.
Maybe
Toilet
this,
Tour.
You can tell which one it is because the picture of Roe, he looks very happy.
This is maybe how Colin Kaepernick got the workout because he did this with Robert Kraft. He's got pictures of that. He's got the toilet from the, I don't know. All right. Hold on. Let's check in with Lauren Lapka. She's looking at the skies and the roads. It's Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Our friend Michael Steele is with us. You know, once a day, at least we want to just check in with what's happening around the in our little fair world. And Washington seems to be the place where there's a lot of things happening in our little fair world. And I got just a couple of things for you. Let me ask you, since we talked last week, now we've had the first round of open hearings yesterday where you had both Mr. Kent and the ambassador sitting there. And that went on forever and ever and ever, which I think plays to the advantage of the Republicans, that if they keep it quiet and it goes on forever, I think that it seems to be less dramatic. But did you, as a guy who ran the Republican Party, Michael Steele, if you were still running the Republican Party, and I say that swallowing hard when I say that to you, is there, would you be happy or upset with what happened yesterday?
I would be concerned. Those two gentlemen who, career State Department, career diplomat, who, you know, one of whom, Ambassador Taylor, has 50 years of service to this country. The other has 60 years of generational service to the country. These are credible individuals who raised alarm bells because they themselves were alarmed by the approach the president was taking and seemingly the lack of interest by the White House with the president's approach regarding the Ukraine. And so politically, I think it presents a real problem. Remember, this is a political process. And yes, you know, the testimony could be dry at times, but look, within that testimony, there was a bombshell. Now we know that there was a third party who overheard a conversation, because the president has a tendency to talk very loud when he's on the phone, and overheard the conversation, which now draws us closer and closer to the White House. And remember, the president's whole thing is, I don't know what these people are talking about. They're making this all up. This never happened. This was a good call. Well, if it was that great, why is everybody not allowed to address that, the greatness of that call?
Well, it also begs
where are all these other people?
It also begs the question of, if it was a great call, put out the actual full transcript, right?
Yeah, put out the full transcript. Yeah,
there's that.
But yeah, I'd be concerned about it because politically,
but let me
ask, it's going to get people's attention.
All right, let's go back to that notion, back to that issue of, there now is this staffer who was apparently Ambassador Taylor's staffer, who was at a restaurant where Ambassador Sondland was on the phone with the president and could hear the president on the phone. Now, what I saw last night was a lot of people who are advocates for the president or surrogates for the president on television last night saying, how is anybody going to hear specifically, unless it's on a speakerphone, and no one's going to guess that Sondland put him on a speakerphone? I mean, I'm guessing that didn't happen. Who knows?
No. Well, look. No, I wouldn't remember. Sondland made a call to the president of the United States in the middle of a restaurant in Kyiv.
Which is raising our alarm bells in the intelligence community that's exactly the kind of stuff that gets intercepted.
He wasn't even on a secure line, so it doesn't matter. I mean, but probably what it was on a speakerphone.
Or
Sondland had the phone away from his ear because the president was talking very loudly.
President talks at that same level, like he's at the helicopter pad. It's always there's a lot of that.
You know what? You laugh at that. That's actually a thing that happens because you have these conversations in a stressed environment, meaning in this case, there's a lot of noise behind you. You're going to elevate the sound of your voice because you don't think someone hears you. So it wouldn't surprise me at all. And who knows? Maybe he was in front of a helicopter when he made the call.
Yeah, it's possible.
But the fact of the matter is, the party can, you know, are going to make excuses. We saw a lot of excuse making. In fact, there was very little of it in dealing with any of the facts that have been presented so far. And again, if there is nothing there, there's no need to be concerned about what the president did. It doesn't rise to an impeachable offense. Put the people, the principal players who've been involved in this thing from the beginning, from Rudy to the chief of staff, in front of the committee and have them debunk it. but they won't because the cross-examination would be too devastating.
Is that eventually going to change all the people who are resisting testifying? Are we going to see some of them being forced to testify? Are they some of them going to decide to testify? What do you imagine will happen there?
That's a good question. I suspect at this point the Dems don't need them. And I think, you know, every effort to that they resist, that they make resisting getting in front of the committee is just one more notch in the obstruction charges that will be brought. And each case will be specifically outlined. So you could see 15, 20 charges of obstruction that would relate to each of the individuals in instances where requests for documents was made, et cetera. So all of that's going to, you know, it's going to make it harder for Mitch McConnell to do what has already been plotted for him to do, and that is to not take up the impeachment matter at all. I think that's what you saw by the members in the committee, the Republican members, creating and laying down the runway as much as they can for McConnell. You know, you saw Jim Jordan speaking, you know, Greek as fast as he could, you know, saying virtually nothing.
I like him. Shirtless Jim Jordan. Yeah. Let me ask you this, though. Is there a possibility that the House votes to impeach and that Mitch McConnell can then say, remember, he used this excuse 18 months out for the Supreme Court. We're too close to an election. Let the voters decide.
Then
what happens? So does it then go to the Supreme Court?
No, it's over. It's over. The Senate doesn't act. I mean, you know, he doesn't have to hold a trial. If he doesn't feel the evidence warrants a trial, he doesn't have to hold a trial. Remember, this is a grand jury investigation.
Okay.
This is an investigation. Everyone's treating it like this is the process. No, this is like if you relate it to a criminal situation, this is where the prosecutors go before a grand jury and lays out the evidence that they have to take it to trial. The grand jury comes back with indictment. Those are the elements that will then go to the Senate. And the Senate will have
Senate for trial.
The impeachment charges, right, the charges.
Yeah.
Will then hold a trial or not hold a trial.
Okay, so then if he doesn't hold the trial and he's got the ability to not hold the trial, then then it really does become, all of this evidence becomes political, which it already is in essence.
Oh, yeah.
It becomes massively political, and it's just basically what it is. All right, let me ask you very quickly about the Democrats. Deval Patrick is going to jump in. We got about 2 minutes left here. So Deval Patrick is jumping into the race. Is it too late, or does he join the new two percenters at the bottom? Or
he probably will have very little runway at all. I'd say less than 2%. But just let's take a note of understanding why he's there. He's there because Barack Obama wants him there. He otherwise would not be in this race. Period.
And why does he want
to be able to connect? If people can't connect that dot, then they don't know politics. But Obama's not happy with what he's seeing. He's probably disappointed in his vice president. There's a very close relationship. He actually encouraged Deval Patrick to run back 2 years ago in 2017 to start the process. Last year in 2018 to start the process to run. Deval, you know, demurred and sort of hedged his bet a little bit and decided no. And now I suspect through further encouragement by the former president is in this race. Would not surprise me that if he begins to show any upward momentum that Obama comes out and endorses him.
And then Biden has to, at that point, it's pretty much over for Biden, right? Doesn't Biden then have to?
Yeah.
Biden be?
Well, it would have been over for Biden to get to that point. It would have been over for Biden. So I don't think Obama is that coldly calculating that he would completely blindside his former vice president. But yeah, I can see that happening. Deval, you know, would make for a very interesting challenge. And again, you can't discount Mike Bloomberg at this point, whose calculation is I don't really need to be on a stage with these other people to begin with, and will likely run a primary campaign without the traditional approaches that we've seen, which will be very interesting as well.
Oh, I think we saw that 4 years ago.
He does have a pathway.
Yeah. I mean, listen, enough money. Any self-funders can do very well because they can go, first of all, they got a plane. They can land wherever they want at any given time.
Right.
That hangar tour that Donald Trump did in 2016, very, very, very effective, right? Going to these private or smaller airports and then having these crowds arrive on the access roads and all that was genius. And so I think that you could see him trying that, although Democrats don't get the same sort of, I mean, the problem is that the president was very good at heating up a crowd. I do not see Michael Bloomberg as a guy who's going to get up there and be very entertaining.
What he needs to do is just create enough doubt in the system to grab enough delegates to go into the convention that he can hold some floor space.
All right. Michael Steele, we'll leave it there. Thank you, my friend.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. There goes Michael Steele. We got the news from a Northwestern Medicine newsroom coming your way, too.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, and if you look at your clock right now, take a look at what time it is, you know that something very magical, very special happens at this time every day. It's 5 o'clock, and it is time.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. By the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, it's time to get on with it. Checking in at
number five.
Pastor Corey Brooks joined John Williams earlier today on the John Williams Show. That's why they call it the John Williams Show, by the way, in case anybody's wondering. To react to Mayor Lori Lightfoot's claim that Uber offered black ministers on the South and West Side $54 million to oppose her proposal to increase the tax on rideshare rides, Brooks says she reached out to Uber in the past about the community projects.
We've never have received anything from Uber, so I was amazed to hear that someone thought that they were offering ministers $54 million because I'm wanting low. Like, where is it?
So did you reach out to any of your colleagues?
Yeah, I called quite a few of them. And supposedly, I guess there was a meeting with some ministers on November 7th. And I guess there was some debate on whether that $54 million was mentioned. But all the guys that I know and ladies that I know who pastor and minister on the South Side and West Side, none of them have any clue about the $54 million.
The mayor said she met personally with several of them, but then said she would provide the names, but then the next day said they don't want to be named.
Well, okay. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How much is this going to cost Uber? I mean, that's to spend $54 million on the pastors.
They're sort of saying that might not be the right number, and the mayor has even backed off of it to say it's millions of dollars.
Yeah.
To try to get them to pit them against her plan, arguing that this is all about hurting the African American community, when she says the data doesn't really show that that's where the rides are originating there and going downtown, which is what's going to be hurt. When you come downtown, that's when you get hit with the biggest charge. If you still do ride sharing, you share a vehicle, you're not going to be hit with that same charge. If you go neighborhood to neighborhood, you're not going to be hit with the same charge unless you go solo. Then it goes up.
So there is a debate.
If you share a ride, you won't see that kind of a thing. Or if you just take an Uber to the nearest train stop or the nearest bus in your neighborhood to get you to public transportation, you're not going to see that. You'll actually see a slight decrease. So she said that the ministers were being, you know, there was some kind of campaign to talk to them to try to convince them otherwise.
And there is a debate about whether the number ever came up in this November 7th meeting.
No one was sure that it came up, so they couldn't answer, you know, a direct answer on, hey, we spoke about it, or did somebody mention it? So it's debatable. I don't know. But I'm sure there are going to be others who are going to speak out to know for sure on what meeting that was and what ministers were involved, because and who's saying that someone offered the black ministers on the South Side and West Side $54 million. That's a big lift.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
That is
it would be a big number.
And I do like how he mentioned Lyft in that, too. That was very good.
Yeah.
Not just Uber.
the $54 million, you know, the VIA service is another one.
I don't think that $54 million is a real number, because there's no way. That would be the biggest single donation to spread across the churches. And they're not every church, right? They're just going to ask. They're going after certain pastors who would theoretically be in the mega system. However, I did. It was interesting when I was listening to John doing this today. It was funny because John was like, is this how this really works? Yeah, this is how this really works.
Yeah, right. You've talked about it before on the show, the way politicians pay close attention to the churches.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the churches make and break. And because what they do is they deliver the people to the polls. They actually drive them to the polls. And that's where they get the money. They go, well, I need buses to take people to the polls. Oh, okay. That seems to
This isn't going away, though, this battle. Uber's a well-funded company, and the mayor is not having it.
Lauren Lapkus taking a look at the skies and the roads.
This week on Chicago's Best, fire up the smoker. The team is cooking up mouthwatering recipes on Chicago's Best Barbecue. It's all Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
All right. Top 5 of 5 continues.
Number 4.
Oh, and another name to the list. Former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick wants to be your Democratic nominee, President of the United States. Will this actually happen? Here's his video.
I admire and respect the candidates in the Democratic field. They bring a richness of ideas and experience and a depth of character that makes me proud to be a Democrat. But if the character of the candidates is an issue in every election, this time is about the character of the country. This time is about whether the day after the election, America will keep her promises. This time is about more than removing an unpopular and divisive leader, as important as that is, but about delivering instead for you.
Okay. I always knew
this guy is super optimistic.
Stephen Urkel was going to be president of the United States, and here he is. Congratulations.
From the south side of Chicago, former governor of Massachusetts. Yeah. But interesting that Michael Steele told us in the earlier segment that Obama might be nudging him to get into the race.
Which means, now, if Michael Steele is right about this, that is news that has been made here. If he's right, and I'm not saying he's wrong, because he has his ear to the train tracks
there. He does.
In Washington, D.C. I think what Michael Steele is saying to us is that everybody knows, all of the former Obama people know, including the president, the former president himself, who's also a former Obama person.
Yes.
They know that Joe Biden doesn't have a chance of getting through this. Pete Buttigieg just edged him out in Iowa.
Booted him out?
There you go. So I think things are just not going well.
Not trending right
for Biden. I saw Biden on the CNN piece. I mean, he sat down for like an hour and a half. And, we know what we got there. There's nothing new and exciting, and there's no hope for any kind of a magical thing to occur. We just know what it is. So I think a lot of people are going to take their shot. It may not be the only one. And, of course, you also have
Bloomberg.
This is going to look very different. You know, Rahm Emanuel, as much as, sometimes he's troubling. No, I don't think he's going to be in. But he said that the person who's going to be the nominee isn't in yet. And he said that a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably knew about the Bloomberg move, and he might have known about the Deval Patrick move.
Might have.
So, all right. Well, we'll see what happens.
Got to get it together quickly.
Yeah, there's a lot of
other
things.
Than 90 days away.
That's right.
Get going.
Checking. I don't think that's going to be his play, though. I don't think he cares about Iowa as much. I think he thinks South Carolina is going to be, and New Hampshire, which was a neighboring state for Massachusetts. So they're very familiar with him. He was in that media market. All right, where are we? We're here.
Number 3.
Everybody knows that the meanest critics in America are on social media. So why do celebrities continue to put up with Jimmy Kimmel's mean tweets segment? Who knows?
Billie Eilish dresses like she got her clothes stolen at the gym, so they gave her what they had in the lost and found bin.
At Chance the Rapper, more like Chance the worthless, spineless, b-less, soulless, purposeless, virtuous sellout. Nice Doritos commercial, you piece of.
Oh, jeez.
There's people that don't like me? What the?
Why does Trey Cool from Green Day look like the emo version of Ted Cruz?
Alice Cooper looked 65 in 1972. How is he still alive?
Gosh. People find fault with absolutely everything.
See, but you gotta laugh at it, because people are still gonna just be jerks.
Right.
So, yeah, take the power away by laughing at how stupid they are.
You think those are real tweets, or Kimmel people are just writing those up?
I think they're real.
I do, too.
Well, they certainly sound real. I think there's no question.
Sort of, but also some of them are kind of creative. And it's like, normally the critics are just big dummies out on social media. Whatever, still funny either way.
Yeah.
It seems to be working. But I like the mechanic, back to Lauren's point, I like the mechanic because what it does is it just proves that social media is really just a cesspool of, it's good for getting information out, but it's a cesspool of just a bunch of people who feel like they're losing out on the whole you're prettier than I am contest that goes on like Instagram and even on Twitter, you know, where people are curating their lives and putting up the most spectacular things. Oh, look at me. I'm on a beach. Oh, look at my feet. I'm just going to take a picture of my feet because there's an ocean behind my feet and you're very cold.
It's all the pictures and you're wondering, do you just like carry a photographer around with you?
Some people do. The influencers do. But the whole thing is just kind of made up. The people who are angry, because if those people walked down the street and they saw somebody, they would hold an elevator door. For somebody.
You'd hope so.
They would never say that stuff in, you know, to somebody's face.
Right. They hide behind that.
Right.
The digital space.
All right. Now, this one's going to get a little interesting.
Number two.
Carmen Electra was on the WGN TV Morning News today.
She sure was.
Yeah. Now, Carmen Electra, as Chicagoans know who were alive and around and cognizant during the Bulls run in the 1990s, Carmen Electra was a fairly consistent... She was almost the sixth bull, the 13th man, woman, on the team.
Carmen, get in there.
She was hanging around. She was on the squad, if you will. Because she was at the time, was it dating or married to Dennis Rodman?
Yeah, she did marry him, didn't she?
I think she did marry him for like an hour.
Before he married himself or after?
So she would have been Madam Ambassador, I think, at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that have been it? So they asked her about her time here in Chicago on the WGN Morning News.
Oh, yes, I was. I was there at the Bulls games watching those iconic Bulls players, Michael Jordan, of course, Dennis, Scottie Pippen. I mean, Chicago was so proud. The world loved the Bulls, and that was just... Wow, what a moment to be there. And I mean, to be honest, it was insane being there finals as, you know, the group.
I'm not sure she's going to remember the interview. She sounds hammered.
Something's going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's more of that. Can we play? Do you have one more? Just throw one more up.
They actually pulled me into the dressing room.
Oh, God.
And Michael Jordan popped a bottle of champagne and he's pouring it in my mouth. And I'm like, is this really happening? This is insane. Yeah, it was, those were good. Those were some really good times. Had a lot of fun.
Oh, boy.
What exactly is going on there?
And she was on promoting this Tubi.
Is that an exercise thing?
No, it's an over-the-top. It's another way by which you can get television. It's an over-the-top digital
streaming service.
Oh, gosh, another one.
Yeah. I think it does network television, right? Isn't that what it does? Stuff like that? Yeah, but when they asked her about that, she didn't know what it was.
I'd rather have starts plugging Hulu, Amazon Prime.
We'll get to. I may play that for you because this is the worst investment Tubi ever made, I think. Or maybe it's the best because she's so wacky that we're all talking about it.
Number one.
I was going to clean my room until I got high.
Florida man is under arrest after proudly showing off his marijuana plant to police and then inviting them to come in and smoke with him.
Ruse.
Deputies say Arthur Carasino was smoking pot when they arrived to check on another incident, and he called them over to show him his 2-foot-tall plant.
Hey, 2 feet. Gah, it's a lot of bud.
The whole scene, unfortunately, for Florida, Mr. Carasino and the Flagler County Sheriff's Office was caught on body cam.
Do you have a marijuana card? Or?
Yeah, I do. I'm working on it. I have a ton. Nails. Come on, guys. Please talk.
Is that your plant, though?
Yeah.
Did you grow it?
I did.
What do you give it? Water?
I was going to say they're going to ask for advice.
I thought it was going to be easy going up to California and learning how to grow pot. The indica strain, the sativa strain, and oh boy, you're looking right at that smallest crystal beds. You got to smoke a bowl with me, please.
Well, I can't.
I know, you're on duty.
Well, no, he's, I mean, where are you going?
Up to get my pipe.
Oh my gosh. Maybe he's been hanging out with Carmen.
Was that, there's more? No. All right. Now, they arrested him, right?
What happened?
They put him in jail for being a dumbass. Does a guy like that need to go away for 5 years? I don't think so.
He was so polite.
I know, exactly. All right. Let's wrap this up.
The top five at five.
That's right. There you go. Anchors away.
Only play that for special people.
Yes, it's true. And we do. Well, I'd say when you have an Admiral Mike Rogers in the studio with us, former director of National Security Agency and Central Security Services chief, and a guy. And how many years in the Navy, sir?
37
years.
So I lived off the taxpayer for almost four decades.
That's right. Exactly.
Think of the implications of that.
Yeah. And we have I always like to point this out, that we do have a Marine who runs all of our audio and all the stuff.
Semper Fi, young man. Happy birthday. Yeah. Marine Corps birthday is coming up.
And that's true. That's true. 244 years of a continuous service to the United States.
Roger that.
Yes, and I always like to remind him that that stands for My Ass Rides in Navy Equipment. All right, let's talk about a couple things here. We brought you in to help work on the computers. I hope you don't mind, because that's what we put in the promo.
Yeah, I'm trying to log in for open enrollment. Could you help me with that after?
I'm here to help.
The segment, because it's really infuriating.
This is what we do. Actually, you're here for a conference, and this is really, really interesting, because I think people now more than ever are aware of what we should have been aware of from the very, very beginning, when we started living our digital cyber world, and all of the information that we have in our life that we are so worried about. Like, you know, you get paper shredders, right? Because you're constantly you don't want to throw out a bill because somebody's going to come steal it and look at it. Everything you could possibly have, your computer or your phone knows it all, right?
Right. The archaeologists of the future are going to love this digital world that we live in, because there is a footprint that future generations are clearly going to be able to study and recreate for all of us.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm so worried about what the future generations will see, or the forensic pathologist, or whatever they are, but I'm worried about right now who can access my data, who can access the camera on my phone.
Which is a valid concern.
All these things like this. Should we be worried?
Well, clearly we're living in this, hyper-connected world where, for example, these devices we all use, our phones, our laptops, are all connected to the outside world in a way that's designed to create greater efficiency and a better user experience for us. But the flip side is this connectivity can be exploited by others. And the reality is, hey, as the director of the National Security Agency, for example, we exploited that capability in the service of our nation against, those who would potentially do harm for us. So
those nations, we don't assume they're doing the same thing back to us, right?
Right. I mean, look, everybody is trying to use cyber as a tool to better understand the world around them. Some are just better at it than others. And then criminals view cyber as a massive revenue source, whether it's stealing information that they can sell, your social security number, your credit card number, or if it's using ransomware, which is a software designed to specifically lock down your data and your information so that, hey, look, you can no longer access it unless you pay me a ransom. This is extortion by another name. So cyber represents a whole lot of opportunity for a whole lot of entities out there, and a definite concern for all of us, not just in our business lives, but in our personal lives.
And big corporations have greater and greater every year budgets devoted to staying secure. And you've seen major data hacks and breaches. And some of it is, as you said, it's consumer fraud. It's trying to get credit card numbers and things like that. But there are bigger things at play here, too, right? It's like, Chicago, home to Boeing, home to
United,
and one of the largest server farms in the world is here in Chicago. Not talked about very much. I guess I shouldn't have just mentioned it, but it is true. Thank you. Don't mention it.
Well,
Admiral, I'll handle all this for you.
Any other secrets to get out
out there.
So, but I mean, it's important. These are the hacking of these corporations isn't just looking at the consumer stuff. It's either looking for our military secrets or to interrupt, right? Because the whole idea here, I know from a Defense Department, from the Pentagon's perspective, is the first attacks in any country, whether it's us attacking someone else or the Russians or the Chinese or whoever it is to blind them, is to screw up the internet system.
Well, the way I would describe it is, look, cyber will be a component of any crisis or any conflict in the future. You've seen that play out for the last several years.
Yeah.
That's the new norm that we're living in. We just got to get used to this. And, you know, this is not, we're not going to buy our way out of this problem. This is about how do we act in a smart, intelligent way, whether as individuals or as organizations. And how do we take prudent steps to attempt to try to mitigate risk to a more acceptable level? The idea that you're going to totally do away with risk, I think, is really unachievable. Or the price point, so to speak, to do it is not sustainable and it's not reasonable.
Okay. There are a lot of concerns, though, I think, that we have as we look at the geopolitical situation here. And if we have, let's assume that our two largest strategic issues here, their two largest strategic adversaries would be Russia and China.
Or potential adversaries.
Potential adversaries. And we are ceding a lot of that digital construction world to those countries, to companies that are coming out of those countries, right? You had Kaspersky Labs and coming out of Russia, or you had these guys who were putting stuff into the telephones from China. How concerned, I'm going to ask a question. We can come back on the other side and you can answer it. How concerned should we be about using foreign national software or equipment? We'll talk about that on the other side. Admiral Mike Rogers is with us, and he is going to be at this conference. I'll give you all the details about that. But first, let's check in with Lauren Lapka. She has her eyes on the skies and the rides. Admiral Mike Rogers is in the studio with us. It's an honor to have you, sir.
Yes, it is.
He used to be the head of the National Security Agency. That's something right there. Mm-hmm. And
if I could, the commander of United States Cyber Command, which was my other big job.
Yes, and commander of the United States.
Because I have great respect for those men and women, and I want to shout out to them because they are working hard to help serve the nation.
So we'll talk about that in just a second because I think that's a fascinating thing. But let me just get to what we were talking about right before. Should Americans be concerned about where their software is coming from, their cybersecurity software specifically? You know, we talk about Kaspersky Labs, and there was some concern, obviously, you know, after the whole Russian event in the 15, 16, 17. Should we be concerned about that? Or, you know, Chinese product that's coming in here, that's more hardware than software, but where are you on that?
So my attitude always was, look, we need to take a risk-based approach here. I don't want to get into the simple, one is good and one is bad. In some areas where I think the impact of potential use of foreign components is a area that has little broad impact, either economically or from a broader national security impact. So there's some areas where I would say, hey, I'd be very comfortable. There are other areas where I would describe it as, are you comfortable with the idea that the product of an authoritarian state whose legal regime compels its commercial sector to provide whatever the government wants, whether it be Moscow or Beijing, are you comfortable with that in some areas? And the answer for me is I'm not comfortable with that in some areas. I'm not everywhere, but in some areas.
Okay. So somebody just for their own security, just as spamware or whatever, that's you're not uncomfortable with that?
Well, you all have to make a decision. For example, I'll only speak to myself. I make a conscious choice about what software and things do I use in my own personal life. Mm-hmm. I have made a decision in some areas. I'm not going to use some of those products.
How do you feel safe ever getting on a telephone? That's what I want to know about you, Admiral.
What you know, I would be like, you have a flip phone or you have one of those burner phones? What do you do?
You're originally from Chicago. You know,
I am.
Politician in this town, when you see them and they get on their phone, they literally pull it out and they flip it open and it's rusty and it's like all banged up. And it's sort of like, why you got that? Hey, don't ask. You know,
that's right. You got a flip phone and let me guess. You're like an AOL user, right?
hey, don't knock AOL.
Yeah, Rose got AOL, okay? So, you know.
You still got the dial-up modem? Come on, make that sound for us, will you?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So let's talk about the national thing here in terms of the great economic potential for a collapse here could be, you know, through some sort of cyber attack, right? How concerned should we as Americans be about that? And what is the Cyber Command, as you were just mentioning?
Right.
What what are they doing about this?
So let me do the second part first. Cyber Command, United States Cyber Command, one of 11 combatant commanders, senior most operational organizations in the DOD, three primary missions: defend the Department of Defense's networks, data systems, and platforms. Mm-hmm. Secondly, create and then employ the offensive cyber capabilities that the Department of Defense has. And thirdly, which really goes to your question, in the event of significant cyber incidents of consequence, to help defend the private sector. And so in that job, I spent a lot of time, you know, in New York, out in Silicon Valley, a couple times here in Chicago, trying to talk to the private sector about, so if you were attacked via cyber, mm-hmm. and it was of significant consequence, how would we partner together to try to defend you and stop that from actually having a significant impact? To go to the first part of your question.
Hey, so is that like a law enforcement initiative, sort of? I mean, could you look at Cyber Command as if, let's say, Boeing or United or one of these big companies called you here, they're calling you as opposed to calling the 911.
Right. So that has happened a couple times. So generally, we're part of a broader government effort. So okay. if somebody came directly to us, to the Department of Defense, we would remind them, hey, we're not a law enforcement organization. And the Department of Homeland Security, for example, has mm-hmm. overall responsibility.
They would do the investigative piece.
Right. And so, but a lot of times, our job was, because we had deep technical expertise and we had capacity, we would often, so take Sony. It was the FBI and NSA in this case, 2014, mm-hmm. That provided capabilities to help Sony, sent, you know, teams out to California. But remember, Cyber Command is a part of the Department of Defense with the DOD's broader mission to defend the nation. We're not there to be the law enforcement investigative forensic with a view that we're going to charge people. Mm-hmm. Our job is, we're trying to stop this from ever happening. We try to stop it from happening by, quite frankly, acting in the opponent's space, not in our own space. Law enforcement tends to operate in our own space.
Right.
As a DOD entity, our real focus is operating in the opponent's
space. Like to say, we take them where the war there.
We take
so they
it to them, right.
What about 5G? Can I ask you about that? Because
it seems
as if that's really China's owning that game in many ways. We supposedly have it in parts of Chicago, but I don't know that it's really, is it really reaching that 5G status? And then you still see that China is supplying some of the infrastructure, some of the parts needed. That leads over to that same discussion we were talking before
right.
about how do we get there? Is that the right thing? Because supposedly 5G is going to help us with the self-driving cars and the next
right.
generation of faster video and everything there at our fingertips.
So a couple thoughts there. Number one, 5G, we need to think about it as more than just, well, this is a better phone service. 5G will give us a level of capacity and capability to handheld digital devices, as well as things like autonomous vehicles that will remove latency. So speed. It's able to move massive amounts of data at high rates of speed with great stability in multiple formats. So not only is it going to power a better phone experience, it will do things like create a stable network that autonomous vehicles that need constant, accurate, high-level network connectivity so they can constantly share data back and forth mm-hmm. so they're making real-time.
Very detailed. Thousands right. of times more detailed than
exactly.
they have now.
Exactly. Stable, constant. It's going to underpin a lot of economic development. So
medicine,
I try to remind people, right, 5G is so much broader than just phone service. So as you think about something that's going to be so foundational to the future, I do think there's a need for us to step back and ask, so what are the economic competitiveness and the national security implications of something so foundational? Ro, I apologize. I interrupted you.
No. Well, the 5G, right now there are people saying, oh, we've got 5G LTE. That is a marketing label.
Right.
That is not what we're talking about here in terms
of
5G.
Yeah, it's nowhere near where it's going to be.
Because remember, 5G is both the technology from the provider and the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It's also reflected in a unique device. There's 5G technology that actually goes into the phone itself.
Right.
For example, which is why you're seeing companies marketing 5G and 5G compatible or 5, you know, another get around as well. It's a 5G LTE,
right?
Which is a little bit of a hybrid.
Yeah. So that real 5G will be starting, we think, next year.
You'll see it in, and you're already seeing in some areas of the United States. The Department of Defense, for example, just announced where we selected 5 bases where we're going to test 5G within the military structure. So 2020 is going to be a pretty significant year.
You have a totally separate.
No, the days where the government, broadly speaking, there are mm-hmm. some areas where this is true, but broadly, the days where the government created its own infrastructure, hey, we came to the decision decades ago, we need to be efficient, we need to save money, we need to take advantage of all this capability.
That does not make me feel better, Mike.
So our water, our power, our rail lines, in some cases, not all, in some cases, some of the communications backbone is infrastructure that all elements of our society use, not just the DOD.
Okay. All right. Well, I quit as an American then because I'm worried about that.
Get a flip phone.
I know. Well, I always like to think of that. That's the thing that's going to save us here. And I'm glad that the military has as much, and DOD, I should say, has as much of a foot in the door in this, because we can't just leave it up to all the private actors here. Because you just never know.
Right. In the long run, the right answer, I believe, is we have got to have a very different model where the government and the private sector are working closer together on this. Because it's so foundational in terms of where it is in our lives, whether it's business or people. It's beyond the scale of individual companies, for example, to me, to withstand the efforts of a nation state like a China or a Russia. By the same token, it is unrealistic to go to the government and say, so protect every private business, protect every company, and you're going without cooperation, without support, without partnership. That's not a good model. So I just think we've got to take a little different approach here.
All right. There is a summit tomorrow, and Admiral Mike Rogers is going to be there. It's the Policy Circle's fourth annual leadership summit, thepolicycircle.org. If people are interested in this organization, or there might even be an opportunity to attend some of these events that are coming up the next couple of days. It's at Venue 610. That's at 610 South Michigan Avenue in Chicago. And you're going to be there tomorrow. We're actually going to make a witch's brew of stuff for your throat, so you're going
to
be just
outstanding. I apologize to the audience for my throat.
We have an entire system of people back there that do nothing but keep our throats working, which is thank God. It's been an honor. Thank you so much for your service to the United States and for your son's service, who's back here right now.
Thanks.
And all of that. So we appreciate everything that you have done. And thank you. And go Navy.
Thank you.
Beat Army. All right.
Go Bears.
Might be a little too late for that, Admiral. I don't want to talk about it. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here. We're going to talk to Richard Roper in just a second about the movies for this week, including but not restricted to Charlie's Angels, the reboot.
Another one.
Oh, my God. Ford versus Ferrari, which is actually a very, very good film. We'll talk about that with him. A Marriage Story with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson in The Report. Also with that Adam Driver. Whew,
he's very busy.
Help but work. But a shockwave is going through Illinois politics just now.
Total stunner.
Just moments ago, John Cullerton, the president of the Senate, of the Illinois Senate, has just announced he is retiring. The political editor of all political editors, Mr. Mike Flannery, is joining us from Fox Chicago. I ask you this, Flans, what does this mean?
Well, we're trying to sort through it. I mean, I can tell you, I just spoke to a couple of people in Springfield. He apparently broke this, he dropped this bombshell, the Senate president did, on his caucus. Within the hour, a spokesman says that he's cleaning up and finishing touches on a statement that'll be soon coming out that asserts that John Cullerton and his wife Pam, who have five children, have been talking about this for a while. That John Cullerton's been negotiating, quote unquote, this with his wife, and she's wanted him to get out of there and to go off and enjoy. I mean, he's age 71, and they want to enjoy their grandchildren and apparently see a bit of the world. You can't separate this though from what appears to be this federal investigation that may be the biggest and most far flung that we've seen in a generation. I mean, there have been arrests and subpoenas flying in Springfield, in the southwest suburbs, in several town halls in the suburbs, and of course, in and around City Hall. We have seen, in an apparently unrelated investigation, John Cullerton's distant cousin, still State Senator Tom Cullerton from Villa Park, was arrested and charged by the feds in relation to an alleged, earlier this year, in relation to an allegedly no-show job he had as an organizer with the Teamsters Union.
Yeah, I thought there was enough distance. I think a lot of people are watching this think there's enough distance between those two guys that makes that this is probably not related. But
there is no sign at all that it's related.
I would say that they're right now at this reading, not without the announcement of some other sort of federal investigation or butcher paper up on somebody's window, right? Those things that we
which you never know.
Right, we've come to get used to here. That's a very plausible story that he wants to spend more time with the family and get out. He's been there for as long as he has. And now obviously there's a sea change here and there's great peril in terms of being there. And do you want to have to answer questions? You have to assume that the Senate president has been called in on an occasion to talk to investigators about different things that are going on in and around Springfield. That would be my guess. And so it'll be interesting. But, you know, where does this go? And Madigan always seems to have been somebody that people were watching very, very closely. We'll just have to see if Madigan and Cullerton, however, if there's any kind of interrelationship there. And the other piece is that I think, and we have 10 seconds left here, but you can tell me, they're really not that close, are they, Madigan and Cullerton?
No, they're not, and they have very different styles. Cullerton has a much lighter hand in controlling the state Senate than Madigan's iron fist over in the House. Yeah. And, you know, of course, this sets off a huge explosion in the House, in the Senate, rather, who's going to take over. And it comes, Ro, and I'll shut my mouth at this point.
Yes.
It comes as... we've had a revelation this week that the feds were recording Mike Madigan's closest friend on the planet Earth outside his family, Mike McLean, the lobbyist from downstate Quincy.
Oh, boy.
And,
all right.
You know, boy.
That's
boom.
It. That boom. Yeah, boom.
Boom is the right,
right
way to say that.
Thank you very much, Mike Flannery. See him tonight at 9 o'clock on Fox 32. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right, let's check in now with Lauren Lapko, who's keeping her eyes on the skies and the rides. You like that?
Yes, it works for me.
We would like to thank our very great friends at Apple Chevrolet in Tinley Park for sponsoring our Canarville Express live holiday show. It's an event for Toys for Tots. Comes up Friday, December 6th, Tinley Park Convention Center. And Apple Chevrolet is an official Toys for Tots drop-off location. So if you cannot make it out to the event on December 6th, you can stop by Apple Chevrolet and drop off your toys for the United States Marine Corps Reserve's Toys for Tots program. Unwrapped toy, game, or cash donation. You can give it to Apple Chevrolet. They're going to make sure it gets to the right place. And you trust these guys, I'm telling you. 8585 West 159th Street in Tinley Park. As a matter of fact, the new general manager of Apple Chevrolet is a Marine himself. So he will make sure that everything gets to exactly where it has to go. And that's going to be with us on the 6th of December. And then the Marines are going to be there collecting all the toys that day. It's such a great event. It happens every year. And Apple Chevrolet has been with me for the last 5 of these events. And it is just, they're just such great partners and great dear friends. John Alfirovich, or Alfie as he's known, but this time of year he's known as Elfie. He is going to be there as well. Go ask for him when you drop off the toys at Apple Chevrolet. Is Elfie here? Ask, is Elfie here? People are going to, he's going to love that. All right, that's what I need to tell you. Apple Chevrolet, I also need to tell you this. Apple Chevrolet is at 8585 West 159th Street in Tinley Park.
It's an annual tradition like no other. Join WGN Morning News' Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggett, Sarah Jindra as well. All of them will be out there for the Chicago Thanksgiving Day Parade. Thanksgiving morning starting at 8 a.m. on WGN-TV.
Mr. Richard Roper has just stepped into the studio.
Yes.
And you are prepared to tell us about the films that are premiering this weekend on our screens, on our big screens.
That is true.
Now, let's start with Ford versus Ferrari,
because sure.
That's a quality film.
Absolutely. Great film, right? And I know we had the interview, the conversation with Mr. Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. You've talked about this, but this is essentially about the Ford Motor Company's attempt in the 1960s to unseat the legendary Ferrari racing team of the 24-hour at Le Mans. Mm-hmm. Which seemed to be an impossible thing to do. So Matt Damon plays Carroll Shelby, the famed American race car driver, auto designer, who's now retired and is designing the car and wants the perfect driver, who would be Christian Bale's Kenny Miles, who's got just a little bit of a temper. It was a stretch for Christian Bale, as he noted
in the interview, that's fair.
To play this character. In fact, here's a little clip here where the Kenny Miles character is being told he's not qualified to run an American race because of a small sticker violation, and then Matt Damon comes in to kind of smooth things over.
nothing in there about my trunk and your lovely little portmanteau.
You're holding the 62 edition of the SCCA.
You can stick this bloody sticker where the sun...
Hey, Bill, what seems to be the problem, Bill?
Well, the problem is that Bill here is a...
No, he didn't mean that.
No, yes, he does.
No,
yes, he really does think that Bill is a...
I'm just doing my job
Bill,
here.
Bill, in my experience, there is, listen to me, something like this, there's always a middle ground. Mm-hmm. All right, now Ken's out of line.
And I'm just doing my job.
I understand you are. You know how he gets on a race day. You know that, all right? But you're not going to DQ us over at Trump.
Happy Bill!
Yeah, I'll handle it.
All right, so there's a sound there. We should explain the visual. The real violation was that his trunk was too big, right? And so he takes a hammer, takes a gigantic
giant wrench,
and then he starts pounding the trunk lid in to make the trunk small.
Now it's got the right cubic square inches, if you will. And Christian Bale there, as people know, he's from England, Welsh. And he's played American characters for so long that last year at the Golden Globes, when he made his acceptance speech for Vice, CNN wrote an article, "What's the deal with Christian Bale's accent?" That's just how he sounds!
Yeah, people are like, is he faking that?
But in the interview that we ran here, I actually had to cut out about 6 minutes when I asked him about the accent, because he drilled down so deep in explaining how he came across the accent to play Kenny Miles, which is not exactly the same accent that Christian Bale has, but it's not really what Kenny Miles sounded like in public, because he figured that Kenny Miles probably made his accent sound a little better in public, but he really would have talked like this. It was crazy. That's how dedicated he is. The fun stuff here, though, as Ro knows, has seen the movie, and I think you'll love it too, is a lot of this is Ford versus Ford. A lot of this is the Ford racing team hierarchy, the PR people, the marketing people. They think this, you know, this mercurial Kenny Miles character is the wrong guy to be representing Ford. He's going to do something wrong. He's going to screw up the image. So Matt Damon's character is forever kind of fighting for his driver just to get him behind the wheel of the car. And that's a lot of cool stuff in there about that as well.
Great performances by not only Christian Bale, Matt Damon, who you just believe for every second he's Carroll Shelby, which is an amazing, for people who are car geeks, you know, that's in terms of American designers and marketers and entrepreneurs, you know, Carroll Shelby is just very much at the top of that, especially in the post-1960s.
Yeah, the Shelby Dodge Charger and all those, you know, famous cars.
Right. He was an outfitter. But I got to give props to Tracy Letts, the great Chicago
Steppenwolf
actor,
legend,
writer, director, wrote August, Osage County. I mean, this guy is like an EGOTs guy. He's an amazing, amazing, amazing talent. He plays Henry Ford II.
Yes.
He is outstanding.
He's great. They have some great scenes as well. So this first-rate ensemble cast, and then the racing sequences, which, of course, a lot of it is done with movie magic, but it really feels like it's 1966 and we're behind the wheel of these cars. The racing sequences are great. The relationship that Kenny Miles has with his young son is really good. The marriage, we get a little bit more of the home life of these. Usually in these movies, all the wife ever does is say, come home safely. And there's more to the characters of the wives and stuff in the, as well. I give it 3.5 stars. I thought it was fantastic.
Wow.
I don't even call this a complaint because it's the decision they made, but there is so much about the Ford inner workings. We only see a little bit of Enzo Ferrari, who's great. And the scenes with Ferrari are great, but you know, we don't feel the real rivalry with Ferrari, because it's all about the Ford inner workings.
But I think that was kind of the deal.
Oh, absolutely. That's the story they wanted to tell.
Yeah.
You know.
It's quite great. I'm glad you gave it 3.5 stars. All right. I'm almost afraid to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Do we need another Charlie's Angels movie?
No, we don't.
Okay. Thank you.
We don't.
Let's move on from that.
No, you know, Charlie's Angels. Everybody loves the idea of Charlie's Angels.
If you actually
sit through an actual episode from 1978, they're terrible. And that was known as Jiggle TV back in the day. Baywatch, Charlie's Angels. So the three angels that worked for Charlie Townsend's detective agency, they'd go undercover. It was really an excuse to get them either skateboarding in bikinis or on a yacht somewhere. Mm-hmm. Then they remade them. They did a movie version in 2000 and then I think in 2003 with Drew Barrymore and Lucy Liu. Those were horrible, Cameron Diaz. Those movies were worse than a television show. They were stupid. The women themselves, they played them as kind of idiots who just happened to get lucky and solve crimes. Now, Elizabeth Banks, who we love, is the writer, director, and she plays Bosley. There's a bunch of Bosleys in this movie. It's not worth getting into why. In this new Charlie's Angels, which is actually a sequel to the TV show and the movies. So they do some photoshopping stuff. So like Patrick Stewart plays the original Bosley, who's been around for 40 years. So they photoshop him in with Farrah Fawcett
in
photos, and it looks just like when Photoshop was invented. Like the first Photoshop, it's so bad. And now you got Kristen Stewart leading the cast, very, very great young actresses stuck in yet another stupid plot where everybody's always trying to get that magic scientific breakthrough, which it turns out can be weaponized. Yes, it can be weaponized. So if it falls into the wrong hands, it's so unnecessary, this movie. Do we have a little clip? This is Kristen Stewart, I think we have, as one of Charlie's Angels.
Oh, okay. Bosley!
Evening, Angels. All this looks very promising. Outstanding. But what about Australian Johnny?
Ta-da!
Oh, you're going to regret this. I was going to give you the world.
The thing is you just talk way too much, and you're super clingy, and you come on way too strong.
And you are the most incredible woman that I've ever met.
I know. So that's 4 months surveillance, 2 countries, and the most embarrassing date I have ever been on in my life.
Yeah.
Are we good?
I will address this to the U.S. Justice Department, along with all your new friends here. We're good to go.
Sweet.
Wait, yeah. Who is that?
That's Patrick Stewart as Bosley.
Oh, it is Patrick
Stewart. He's Bosley, yes. Okay. I feel like, who's a great actor, and I feel like he just was handed his lines right before the scene. He's just phoning it in. Oh, good work, Angels. What else do I say now? What's my next line? Where's my jet?
Was Charlie the one that was always on speakerphone?
Charlie was on speakerphone. John Forsythe, yeah. Who was on
Dynasty.
Yeah. And now there's still a Charlie. That one's, he's passed away according to this, but they use a voice, you know, translator to make him still sound like Charlie. But the conceit of this is that there are like 100 Bosleys because the agency has gone global.
Okay.
So anybody who kind of leads a team of three angels is called Bosley. So Elizabeth Banks plays Bosley.
Oh, you here. See, you did have to explain it, didn't you?
Yeah, unfortunately. None of that matters.
We just love Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, she's great. And, you know,
I like her a lot.
You can tell from the dialogue that there's a lot of kind of hipster, you know, chick power stuff, but it's really still just three young women in skimpy outfits, you know, jetting about the planet. The plot is too ridiculous even to get into. But the larger point is they keep making bad movies from bad TV shows. You know, you think of the best movies made from TV shows. You think of Mission Impossible, right? Mm-hmm. The Mission Impossible franchise. The Fugitive. Those were good TV shows to start with. There was a good premise to start with. When you make movies about McHale's Navy
Sanford
and SWAT and, you know, Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
The Honeymooners, which is a great show, but they almost always end up being terrible movies. They're from another time. The Bewitched movie was horrible.
You know what I like, though? I liked the 21 Jump Street. Because it was kind of a takeoff on it, as opposed to it wasn't trying to take itself seriously.
They basically just took the title. 21 Jump Street. They made fun of the fact that no way in the world did Channing Tatum look like a high school kid at any point. You know,
he didn't.
So, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, with Charlie's Angels, they're still trying to stay true to crap. Mm-hmm. You know, they should have just used the title and done something completely different.
This Adam Driver is having quite a career, right?
Yes, sir.
Can we talk about him on the other side? We got quickly the big story that is happening here in Chicago, just breaking within the last half hour, is that John Cullerton, who's the Senate president, longstanding, one of the big power brokers in Springfield, is stepping down. And people are confused, and they are bewildered, and they are speculating the worst. We will talk to a guy who is an expert in this kind of thing. Tom Serafin is going to join us in just a few minutes. And on the other side, can we talk about, there's a couple of movies, including this one. Is it Marriage Story that's potentially an Oscar contender, right?
And The Report. Adam Driver's in both of those movies.
Scarlett Johansson.
She's in one of those movies.
ScarJo is making her, right after, this is, she was, at this point, falling in love with Colin Jost. Or do you say Yost?
Jost.
She was making this movie. We will tell you all about that on the other side. It's very interesting. We are living in may we live in interesting times. And yes, we are living in interesting times. There are no two ways around that. Plus, I got Casey and the Sunshine Band tickets. I can't forget to give those away. So that's coming up as well, because we got the news. Should I just do that here because we got so many other things going on? Can I do that? I'm allowed to do it. All right, that's what I'm going to do. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Rips us off for a pair of tickets to go see Casey and the Sunshine Band at the Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds, New Buffalo. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. Get ready to get down tonight. Actually, you'll be getting down on the 28th of December is when you'll be actually getting down, just to be certain of that. That, by the way, Four Winds Casino is your entertainment escape. Kim's got the news right now. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantzis right here. We'll get right back to Richard Roper reviewing. There's, if you like the Adam Driver, this is a good time for you because Adam Driver is having the hottest career in Hollywood. And we'll tell you about two films he's in, that, both of which may become Oscar nominated. Who knew that was going to occur? But before we do that, one of the big, I think no less than a seismic event has just happened in Illinois politics. Just within the last hour, John Cullerton, the president of the Illinois Senate, has just announced he is stepping down on January 1st. What does this mean? Tom Serafin, who has been a long-time consultant into this world, a man who knows a little bit about what happens in Springfield, joins us right now. Tom, the story here, what Cullerton is telling people, and this is being rushed fairly quickly because a statement wasn't released. His press people are saying they're working on a statement. He announced it to his colleagues first, and of course, you know, that's a secret in Springfield lasts as long as one thousandth of a second. So the real question is there something else going on here?
Well, it's good to talk to you guys. And of course, my gray hair shows my ears probably, but you know, it's as you say, it's the process. John Patterson, who was a former Daily Herald political editor and writer, covered Springfield for a long time, has been John Cullerton's press secretary for a good amount of time. He's very wise, very sharp. So these are the kinds of things you plan and the kinds of things you kind of unveil at the proper time with the proper circumstances, and you lead up to it with you know, kind of a history of all the good things that he's done in his life. You know, he's been around for a long time. He's 70, 71, 72. So he's accomplished a good deal, and president of the Illinois Senate, president. Of course, there's all these other things going on down there with the federal government, you know, looking at various different people. His cousin, Tom Cullerton, who I happen to like, is a friend of mine, is under scrutiny, and he's got an issue that he has to deal with the federal government. But it raises questions, but certainly, you know, at his stage and his life and where he is today, it's not surprising that he would want to retire, especially in light of everything that's going on in Springfield. And, of course, this year, probably of any other year in his life in Springfield, he's accomplished a great deal, passed a $45 billion capital projects bill. I mean, that's so large that, you know, 2 months ago, 20% of those dollars hadn't been allocated yet because they couldn't find projects. So
only in government do you get that. We are going to get the money. We're going to spend it. We really don't know what we're spending on yet, but we'll figure it out.
Don't worry about it.
Well,
right?
it's that big a deal. I mean, and, you know, there's not a lot of scrutiny. Of course, the press corps in Springfield is, you know, gone for 35 people when I was working in the press corps, down to half a dozen now. So the scrutiny is not there like it has been. So, you know, it raises questions, but at the same time, he's certainly entitled to leave. I mean, I remember when his children were very little and he was campaigning, you know, against Dan Rostenkowski for Congress. And, of course, I was doing Congressman Rostenkowski's campaign. He was a formidable candidate, and he had a beautiful family. And, you know, everywhere we went, you know, we had Congressman Rostenkowski and that beautiful John Cullerton family.
That's right. So, His wife, Pam, is being mentioned in this.
She is.
And she is a force of nature. She's involved in a lot of charity work here. She's a she's a very dynamic human being.
Mm-hmm. Classy lady.
Yeah, she really is. And she's beloved. He's sometimes feared and snarled at, and she walks in the room and everybody, you know, is, it's sort of like the way Ann Burke is for Ed Burke.
That's true.
But there is there is something that just doesn't seem right about, like, as we're pointing out here about the process of it. If this were really about family and it weren't a very last minute decision, this would have been planned better. Now, you know, things can go wrong. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for the moment. That they didn't think this was going to be that big of a deal, but it is a big deal, especially given the fact that you've got the feds literally handing out indictments like Halloween candy.
Well, breathing down the necks of Springfield, it seems as if a lot of people are very concerned right now with what they know and what's been caught on, you know, with all the wiretaps and things like that throughout Springfield.
A source has just told me that in the break here that there isn't. There's a wiretap that has just been revealed. That's Mike McLean, who was very close to Mike Madigan, apparently had been wired up. And so this is just now becoming, this is just now going public. And I had a source tell me who was familiar with the circumstances surrounding that, saying that it is highly unlikely that John Cullerton is on that wiretap. So I don't know. That's what a source is telling. That's a single source telling me that right now. So
unlikely that he would be on that wiretap.
Yeah, unlikely that John Cullerton is on that wiretap, and that therefore this being related to that is unlikely.
It just seems the only strange part about it right now just seems like the suddenness of it. Even the governor was caught on the way out of Springfield, and he said no idea, no one had a clue. So,
right,
sort of
strange. Representative Mike McClain, got elected out of Quincy, and after he retired, he developed this very close bond with the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan. And as he moved through the hallways and what they would call the rail activity on the third floor, he was always carrying the message, or he was always carrying the information. He knew how things would unveil themselves on the horizon.
The hand,
very
if you
wise
will.
Man.
Yeah. The whisperer. Yeah.
Right. And Ray Long was the writer for the Tribune, great writer, reporter, covered Springfield for a long time, broke a lot of those stories in the last week.
Tom?
And there's more of that going on.
Tom, we'll have to run. We'll have to leave it there. But thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom Sarah.
God bless you guys.
Thank you. You too. Lauren Lapka, what's happening on the roads and the skies? Richard Roper is back with us right now. So we're going in between the seismic activity down in Springfield, John Cullerton announcing he's retiring, in a shocker to everybody, and movies that are coming out this weekend. They're important. Big weekend, though. These are, we're in big weekends. You got Oscar bait this weekend, of course. We talk about Ford versus Ferrari. Probably will get nominated for a number of different categories. Charlie's Angels, of course.
Razzie time.
Which will not be nominated. And two Adam Driver movies.
Well, look, we can do the political segue here. You just went from statewide political intrigue to the report, which is based on the Senate Intelligence Committee commissioning a study of potential torture tactics used by the CIA in the wake of 9/11. Adam Driver plays a real-life guy named Daniel Jones, who was assigned to this. He was given access. They put him in like a lead-lined room in the bowels of the Pentagon somewhere. And he was allowed access to communications between various CIA and other government officials. He couldn't print out any of the documents. He couldn't take any of the documents with him. He could just show up for work every day and put together his report, which ended up being something like 8,000 pages. It took him 5 years to put it together. And then, by that point, Barack Obama had just been elected president, and his office wasn't really all that interested in going public with this because he had just won, partially based on, I'm going to run a bipartisan, across the aisle, let's work together, new era. It's not going to be Dems versus Republicans. And he thought, if I start my presidency with public hearings about the Bush administration either sanctioning or not knowing about torture tactics, I'm going to use up all my goodwill. So the battle here, in addition to, getting to the truth, is even getting the truth out there. So here's a clip of Adam Driver as Daniel Jones, who's at the end of his rope after 5 years of working on this report and discovering it may never even see the light of day.
If we hadn't stopped Padilla, this entire area would be radioactive today.
Jose Padilla. Padilla found the instructions for his dirty bomb online. In an article entitled, Making and Owning an H-Bomb is the kind of challenge real Americans seek. It says, fill two buckets with uranium and swing them above your head as fast as possible. It was a joke. As far as we can tell, everything they attribute to EITs they already had, from other sources, from foreign governments, from other methods. They claim they saved lives, but what they really did was make it impossible to prosecute a mass murderer like KSM, because if what we did to him ever came out in a court of law, the case is over. The guy planned 9/11, and instead of going to jail for the rest of his life, the CIA turned him into a recruiting tool for a war we're still fighting.
Stop meeting with them.
That's Annette Bening as Dianne Feinstein, too.
Ooh,
in this
love
movie. EIT, Enhanced Interrogation Techniques, right? And that's, that was the code for waterboarding and
shoving a
stripping
guy
him naked and shaving him. And the recreations of the torture sequences are really harrowing here. It's a fascinating story. I'm giving it three stars because it's got a lot of that All the President's Men or Spotlight, investigative film. It does get bogged down a little bit in the procedural stuff. You're spending a lot of time with characters hunched over keyboards. But it's an incredible story. It's an amazing tale.
Yeah.
And it's a bipartisan. This is not a liberal attack on the Bush administration. As I said, it really kind of goes after the Obama administration. John Hamm plays Obama's chief of staff. who keeps with his charming way telling Adam Driver, you need to let this go if you want to have a career in government, pal. Let it go. Just let it go. People don't need to know this.
Fun fact, Jose Padilla, classmate of mine at Disney, Disney Magnet School. Not a good student.
Yeah, that was a, well, that's why the dirty bomb didn't go up. They picked him up in Miami. Well, they picked him up in Miami trying to buy the uranium, right? Wasn't that the deal? Yeah.
I thought he was picked up here. No, at O'Hare.
Or maybe at O'Hare, but on his way to Miami, something like that.
Yeah, he was on his way out of town.
Yeah, because that was where the thing was going to happen. Yeah, this was a... Yeah, Chicago. That's really a Chicago connection to all this.
He was a former gang member. Remember, a Chicago gang member that turned.
And at the crux of this was, however you feel about these enhanced interrogation techniques, is that they don't historically work, as they prove and point out in this film. Of the 100 and so plus detainees, first of all, 25 of them were not really involved at all. They kept elevating the status of a lot of these guys.
And they're still sitting down there at Guantanamo.
Yeah.
And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is KSM, as they call him here, still down there. Yep. And they stopped the trial of his. They were doing a military-style trial down there with him. And they stopped that halfway through. It's really unclear, what do you do now with those guys? Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy... I'm conflicted by this because in a battlefield situation, it's an exigent situation. You need to get information in your right with trained guys like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who stood up to waterboarding. I think it was 28 times or whatever that number was that he had been waterboarded. It was a number.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah.
It was well over. It was a 24 at least. He had stood up to it for a long time. And then they eventually got stuff, but by the time they got stuff, it was not operational because it was more than years old, what he knew.
Because he'd been out of circulation, and that's the thing. I agree. I mean, look, I understand when people say, who cares? These people, they attacked the United States by any means necessary to get the information, but then there's the other question of whether or not they just tell you what you want to hear when you break them down, prisoners who are being tortured. And there were these two civilians that were brought in by the United States and paid tens of millions of dollars because they had kind of perfected, they said, this technique, even though they had never really used it on anybody until they started using it in these dark sites, on foreign soil. So complex stuff, and the film is smart enough to kind of show all sides of that. But at the heart of it is Adam Driver playing this guy, the real-life guy, who shortly after this adventure decided to go into a different line of work, I think, because he got frustrated with government bureaucracy.
Is this... So you say 3 stars.
Yeah, I think it's a little too... I think, first of all, it's a tough subject matter. I think a lot of people are going to feel about this the way some of the characters did. Like, this is in the past. We know what happened. We don't want to see about cover-ups or people trying to, keep it under the rug.
There's more going on. The news is more interesting.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems that The Post ran into, which was The Post was, this story, obviously, about the Pentagon Papers, right?
Yep.
Tom Hanks, right? How do you go wrong? But... Then it was like, well, I don't know. I'm watching this. Too much of this in the news. It was like after September 11th, you couldn't do movies that were, about the Middle East or about any of that stuff because people were like, they just.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. With a movie like Spotlight, it was about the Catholic Church scandal of like the late 1990s and came out almost 20 years after the fact and really concentrated on the newspaper side of it.
Right.
So you felt like you were learning something.
All right. So Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver are in Marriage Report.
Marriage Report. Marriage Report story. The story of the Marriage Report. Yeah, Marriage Story. This is one of those heavy dramas. It's all about a young couple. Adam Driver's a theater director. Scarlett Johansson plays an actress who kind of gave up her career to marry Adam Driver's character. And now after 10 years, they're deciding that they're going to have an amicable divorce. And they're so cool and hip and modern and new age parents that they're not even going to need lawyers when they start initiating divorce proceedings. It's going to be easy. Nothing can possibly go wrong. For the next 2 hours, you can imagine what happens. They end up in, even though they're from New York, they wind up in a Los Angeles courtroom with two $800 an hour attorneys battling it out as they scream at each other. So it's one of those kind of Ingmar Bergman or darker Woody Allen things. You're watching these two good-hearted people who went into
Kramer
the marriage with
Kramer.
Best intentions, yes, as if if it was just the courtroom battles. So, I mean, it's very insightful. I know I'm giving this 3 stars as well. A lot of critics are calling it like the best movie of the year. They're just enthralled by it, and I understand that. To me, it seems a little stagey and a little theatrical and a little overly written. It's actually based on the director, writer, Noah Baumbach, who's a great, great filmmaker, and his marriage to Jennifer Jason Leigh. And it's kind of inspired by that. I'm sure she's going to love this movie. glad we're still divorced.
Well, the lawyers are going to get called again. That's going to be the good news.
You know when you get to the height of absurdity when the two legally separated parents on Halloween make their poor kid go trick-or-treating twice in separate neighborhoods because they have to keep apart from each other, and the poor kid does not want to go a second time. They're just yanking him. Because they're literally yanking on either arm of this poor kid, using him as a tool, as often happens, unfortunately. So it's good stuff. It's great acting. Adam Driver, he actually has some monologues in here that are like world class. You're stunned. You almost want to give him an ovation if you're seeing it in a theater.
I can't believe that when I first saw him on Girls, I cannot believe that guy from Girls, who got, you know, fully frontal naked in the first season of Girls,
kind of played a goof, you know.
Yeah, I can't believe, like a slacker, right? I can't believe that guy is now probably, in terms of his generation, probably the hottest actor in Hollywood.
He is. And he's in the Star Wars franchises. He was in Black Klansman. I mean, he chooses all these great projects. I didn't see it coming.
Well, they choose him, too.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I did not see it coming. I agree with you. I thought, well, what is this guy? But he's, you know, he's a fascinating cat, Adam Driver. This guy was in the Marines. He was a Marine who was going to go into combat duty until he sustained a serious training injury and then decided he's going to be an actor.
All right.
So there you have it.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
That was perfect. All right. We'll talk more about all of these things. Well, coming up tomorrow. There's a lot more coming up. We'll see Richard tomorrow as well. And we've got Justin Kaufman, I think is his name, and he's going to be joining us here in 2 minutes.